and members of the public that are in the gallery this morning. I'd like to declare the meeting open at 9:35. Firstly, as is tradition, I'd like to acknowledge the Quandamooka people, who are the traditional custodians of the land in which we meet here this morning. And on your behalf, I'd like to pay respect to their elders past and present and extend that respect to any other Indigenous Australians that might be present this morning. Councillors, I'm going to refer you back, as I do at each general meeting, to section 32 of the standing orders and to the members of the public in regards to public conduct at meetings. Rule number one is turn your mobile phone off. Turn it up. Oh, normally people tell me to turn my voice down. Okay. All right, well, I'll just... I think that's just my speaker. Just let me know, councillors, if I'll use my mother voice. So just for a reminder for the members in the gallery this morning, members of the public in the gallery, that we have rules in regards to public conduct at our meetings. So all members of the public present at a meeting must, not without the prior approval of a chairperson, make any audio or video recordings or take any photographs, remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way, not bring into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with other persons present. Be suitably dressed and, of course, as I've just reminded Councillor Edwards, to turn all mobile devices to silent mode. And if you need to take a call, please leave the meeting. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present here today that at this meeting that if you're not complying with these requirements, I may, with or without such notice, require that person to leave the meeting and not return for a period as the chairperson decides, and that could include future meetings. We have no leaves of absence this morning, councillors, so we'll go straight to our devotional segment, and it was great pleasure that we welcome back Reverend Pastor Peter Greaves from C3 Church, Rutland Bay, and he will now lead us in a brief devotional segment. Thank you, Pastor.
Thanks, Mayor Karen. Councillors, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for the opportunity to share something with you this morning. Judges 14 verse 5 talks about Samson killed a lion on the way down to Timnah and tore it apart like it was a little goat. A little while later, he went back past the lion and found some honey in it and ate the honey that was in the carcass. So sometimes that which doesn't kill you can sustain you. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So that quote, who I'm sure we've all heard of it, that quote is attributed to the German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, which we'd call Freddy. And actually he said it much more eloquently, that which does not kill us makes us stronger. It turns out that he was right. So I love the internet. So studies have shown that some trauma survivors report positive changes and enhanced personal development called post-traumatic growth. PTG refers to any beneficial change resulting from a major life crisis or traumatic event. But people most commonly experience a positive shift by having a renewed appreciation for life, adopting a new worldview with new possibilities for themselves, feeling more personal strength, feeling more satisfied spiritually, and or their relationships improve. So that which has tried to kill us can sustain us, being the point. So four things that I wanted to say will help us, and I think Lance, I've heard Councillor Lance Hewitt say this twice, that as soon as he became a councillor, 50% of the people hated him. And you're into people business, you know, as long as it's around 50, if it's 51, you're out, so that's kind of the deal. But I think what we need to value and guard is, so the first thing is relationships. So if we've got a husband or a wife, or for a father or mother, I think they should come first before our career or job. So that can always help us when times get tough, because we're talking about what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And that's with that thought in mind. So the second thing would be, don't attempt to draw unrealistic strength from past experiences. So stay current and let's not live in the past. I've found I have a strength to handle each circumstance as it comes, weirdly enough. And when you look back, you think, how on earth did I handle that? Third thing is, don't revisit or meditate unhealthy criticisms, which we do have tendencies to do, and I'm sure we've all been criticised some way, shape or form. Fourth and last thing is, don't continually discuss the past failures that we have. So remember, the lions you've killed, draw sustenance from them, move on to the next challenge. What doesn't kill us makes us stronger. I hope that helps. Let's pray. Father, we just thank you, Lord, for your presence in this city. We thank you for These people here, the decision makers of Redland City, so I pray that wisdom, courage and boldness would rest on their shoulders as they make decisions and as they discuss the nature and things of the city. In Jesus' name, bless them, I pray. Amen. God bless you guys. Have a great day.
Councillors, I'll just note that I haven't been advised of any recognition of achievement this morning, so we'll move straight on to our receipt and confirmation of minutes. I'm going to need a mover and seconder that the minutes of the general meeting held on the 20th of June 2018 be confirmed, please. Move Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Edwards. Are there any items of correctness? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour, those against. The motion is carried unanimously. I also need another motion, a mover and a seconder to a motion that the minutes of the special budget meeting of the 25th of June 2018 be confirmed. Move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Edwards. Any items of correctness? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour, those against. Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Okay. Oh, pardon me. Minutes of special meeting, Redland Draft City Plan. I need to move and second those minutes be confirmed. That was the 26th, the 25th of June and the 6th of July. Move Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Mitchell. Any items of correctness need to be commented on? No. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Matters outstanding from minutes of previous general meeting. I'll ask the Chief Executive Officer to present matters outstanding. Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. This item, obviously negotiations are still continuing for the purchase of that Commonwealth land at Birkdale. I think, Madam Mayor, you're actually continuing conversations in Canberra on that front, and then once negotiations have progressed to a stage, Council would then need to consider the land use planning for that site, at which point the form of community engagement would be determined. So at the moment, it's sort of still on.
Just note also that there is a matter lying on the table, which is the resumption of easement of open space and pathway purposes, and we'll be taking that off the table today for further debate. Public participation. In accordance with Section 31 of our Policy 3127, Council Meeting Standing Orders, a period of 15 minutes may be made available by resolution to permit members of the public to address the local government on matters of public interest relating to our local government. Our priority will be given to members of the public who have made a written application to do so, and I do note we have received one formal application and a late application this morning. So if I could, councillors, I'd ask that we suspend meeting order, meeting proceedings for 15 minutes. That move Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Boglari. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. So firstly, before I invite the speakers up to the microphone, if I could just bring your attention for those who will be addressing Council to some of the signage in the chambers. It is Council's usual practice to require any person wishing to address the meeting to state their name and suburb or organisation that they represent and the subject they wish to speak about. This information is recorded in the minutes of the meeting, which is a public document available for inspection at Council's administration building and published on Council's website. I'd also like to advise that the meeting is being recorded in audio video and that by speaking you acknowledge and agree that the recording video may be placed in the public domain. So for any persons addressing the meeting here this morning, would you please start by stating your name and suburb or the organisation that you represent and the subject you wish to speak about. Please stand unless you're unable to do so. Act and speak with decorum. Be respectful and courteous. Make no comments directed at any individual council employee, councillor or member of the public, ensuring that all comments relate to Council as a whole. Now, as Chairperson, it is my responsibility to consider each application on its merits and consider any relevant matter in making a decision to allow or disallow a person to address the local government. I also will give priority to members of the public who have made a written application to the CEO to address Council. It's also my responsibility to determine the maximum number of speakers based on the number of persons wanting to speak and the time available. Each speaker has a maximum of 5 minutes, dependent on the number of speakers. It is also my responsibility, if necessary, to withdraw the approval to address council before the time period has elapsed. Just a really strong reminder that debate or discussion cannot be entered into at this time. So with that, I will now ask... I think I've got a mover and second to that already. I jumped the gun on that one. We have Mrs. Annette Richards and Mr. Cole Sutcliffe representing the Rotary Club of Capalabar, who have asked to address council this morning.
Good morning all. Annette Richards from Calabar and of course representing the Rotary Club of Calabar. I tend to be a soft speaker, so if you're not hearing me, please give me a sign. I thank you for giving us the opportunity to address you this morning about the Redmond Space and our sponsorship. I will quickly outline why we've asked for 5,000 more sponsorship for this event than what we had last year. Bringing the amount we are asking for from council to $20,000, not the $30,000 that I am responsible for putting in the application. $30,000 is actually what we budgeted for sponsorship overall. $20,000 is what we're needing from council. This year is the fifth year of the Redlands Bayside Blues Festival. In 2017, we thought we were well on track on our long-term planning to become sustainable in a reasonable time frame, whilst being aware that we could always need some help due to the amount of infrastructure we have to bring into the venue to hold the event. We were set back with the same through having to close the event 3 hours early last year due to a severe weather event. And certainly, that is a 6 to 9 o'clock evening slot where we sell the most alcohol and we have the most food sales. This affected our ability to plan for the future a little bit and resulted in a more than $5,800 loss of relevant. Its members. The event is funded by a voluntary gold coin entry, stallholders' fees, a bar, and subsidised ticket sales in the interfund. The aim of the event has always been to have a community event for families in the Capalabar area. The Capalabar Club has again committed $10,000 towards this event, which effectively means $16,000 when taking into account the cost. So taking into account feedback, we wanted to increase children's activities, not with more rides, rather with interactive activities, thus value adding to our event and our program and helping to increase our ticket sales. Lastly, we wanted to implement a couple of the ideas we obtained through the tourism and events workshops. We identified a need to add to our budget ability to have professional media record this year's event so that when we go to the wider community to seek corporate sponsorship, which we are finding a little bit difficult as an event of only 4 years' history, we will have a professional presentation which shows absolutely in action. We wanted to look at having transport options that would make it easier to get people to the event. Parking and access to that particular venue is difficult. But we want to stick to our core aim of having a signature event in the Calabar district that is friendly to everybody. We just want to grow it and we want to involve the wider community as much as possible. We are concerned we need to secure more than the 5,000 sponsorship we already have from council to not have to consider cancelling this year's event. It is not our aim in the long term to be dependent on councillor year after year after year. And I'll just get Cole now to share with you some of the statistics we have picked up and some of the actions we are wanting to take in the future. Thank you.
Thanks, Annette. My name's Cole Sutcliffe, and I'm past president of the Rotary Club of Capellaba. As Annette said, our focus first off was to establish a blues festival in the Redlands in Capellaba Regional Park. The second step was consolidation of the event, which has occurred over the last few years, and eventually to have sustainability of that event. As part of our processes, we engage with others, and one of those others is the Army Cadets within the Redlands. They receive a donation from Redlands Community, Redlands Capellaba, and they collect information for us, for example, the date. We have taken a while to establish the date. It's the second weekend of October. It's been a little bit of a moving feast because of the Queen's birthday changes, school holidays and Redfest. But now our surveys show that the second week of October is the preferred one. During the time of running the event, we began the first year at 2,500 approximately, and within about 3 to 4 years, we're now at 4,500 people attending. And the cadets ask the people, where do you come from? What's your postcode? It's interesting to note that in our first year, around 75% of the people saw it as a Capellaba event and were from the postcode 4157 or close proximity to that. In recent times, we've changed that emphasis and now are picking up 25% of the postcode coming from within the Redlands. But the interesting thing is that the postcode has changed from 7% outside the Redlands to now being 13% of the attendees coming from outside the Redlands. The other part of the survey that we do is, how did you hear about us? Locals tell us about the signs and papers, and also Facebook. The presence of that has increased from 10% saying that's how they heard about us to about 23% now saying Facebook is the way that we get the message. But the other interesting thing is to ask those people who have postcodes outside the Redlands City Council area, and how did you hear about us? Now, that's increased from 5% to 20% of people saying, we heard about you through being at other blues festivals or following the particular bands that you bring along. So that's important for us for the future. And in order to do that, we've got to become sustainable, and we've got to be able to begin to have certainty to our funding within 12 months ahead, so that we can go to Broadbeach Blues Festival, say in May, and advertise about the Blues Festival in the Redlands. Eventually, we want to increase our outreach and our numbers and decrease our reliability on grants. We see that with that increase of numbers, particularly coming from outside the Redlands City Council area, we're increasing the outreach and the tourism potential of people coming here and perhaps staying the night because of the fact that they've come to the festival. And the Redlands Coast brand will now become an important feature of our advertising. Community involvement has always been an important part of us. Our suppliers, particularly the food vendors, have always, where possible, been within the Redlands City Council area. And we've begun to look at other partners, other service clubs joining us. Not only Rotary service clubs, but the Capellaba Lions Club, coming along and supporting us in certain ways. As well as that, we've looked beyond Redlands City Council for grants, we've looked for sponsorship, and we've looked for other organisations that have grants. We know we're always going to be requiring a fair bit of infrastructure because of just of the location that we're at. We're always going to require to bring in fencing, to bring in toilets, to bring in a stage. Although there has been one developed there, we still need some support for that particular stage, and lights. Where possible, we use locals for that. This is an event, and if you think of other events that are on the Queensland calendar, events like the Gympie Muster, the Mount Isa Rodeo, the Charters Towers Country Music Festivals, they're all events that had their foundation in service clubs like Rotary. Apex for the Muster, Rotary for the Rodeo, etc. But now, those events are run and owned by their communities. They are major community events. The service clubs have been able to seed them and then move back as the community has taken that responsibility on. And we have that same vision for this particular activity, that gradually the community will become involved in the management and the oversight of this particular event. But it just doesn't happen overnight. It takes time to found an event and then to get it established, as we're trying to do. We also have a link to that area. Since 2003, Capella Bar Rotary Club has been working on the area known as the Rocks, that's on Tingalpa Creek there, and have taken it from a pretty harsh-looking area to one now that's valued by the community. So with that in mind, and the link to the Rocks, we would say that for the future, we want to see that the Blues Rocks at Capella Bar. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Cole. Desley, Mrs. Horton, would you like to make your way to the microphone? I believe you've actually asked if you can address council this morning. So just a reminder to start with your name and the suburb or the organisation that you represent, and you may begin when you're ready. Thanks, Mrs. Horton.
Beside the reserve, on the eastern side. The eastern side, the whole of that reserve is in my face constantly. I'm 77 years old. I've seen it deteriorate from a happy family place to the congregation of antisocial behaviour, drugs. We've had a hanging on the beach. We had a girl disappear after parking her car on the beach and drowned. My 10-year-old granddaughter has been accosted. It can't go on. We were helped initially by a Sergeant Nick Evans. We agreed to put a camera on our house for the police department. I've had stones thrown through my windows. I'm very reluctant to get involved, but I'm old. I really need to say my piece. Nick Evans helped us. He had a meeting with council, Sergeant Nick Evans, you might remember, about cameras, and he got no support. I just feel the hooning up and down Main Road would not happen if the destination was not so attractive on the point. They leave their rubbish. The rubbish is horrific. One morning there was part of a ute hanging in one of the fig trees, just hanging in the ute. Recently they've lit a fire on one of the picnic tables. Just last week, a cushion or something similar was disintegrated and two fires were lit on the walkway. Bollards are pulled out, council signs are removed and thrown in the water. I see it all. I'm not saying someone said, I see it. Okay, every day. If something's not done, there's going to be something serious happens down there. We are so vulnerable, even the residents, because I have actually seen drug deals by young people, still at school. Where are we going? Police Council, we consider cameras. Doesn't have to operate all the time. There's a certain percentage of groups. I can tell you there's three at the moment. Their rubbish they leave is horrific. Someone has to clean it up. I clean it up. I clean the jetty every morning. I pick up the fishing line and the hooks that gets round the boats. Feet. They swear it. I could go on a lot more.
Thank you, Mrs. Horton. I appreciate you taking the time to come and address us this morning. Councillors, I'll just check if there's anyone else in the public gallery that wishes to address council. Mrs. Murphy? Mrs. Murphy, you'll need to come to the microphone, sorry. Well, I'm afraid we have to have it on record. So you know the drill, your name, suburb.
My name's Kate Murphy. I live at Thorlands. I just wanted to congratulate the council on putting this wonderful electronic fence around the instead we've had up the front that we can't see. It's done. What's going on. So that's really good.
Thank you, Mrs. Murphy. And hopefully today we sort out some of that buzz in the in the microphone. But Chambers coming into the 21st century. We have two other people wishing to address council. I'm going to require an extension of that time frame. Move Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour for 10 minutes, councillors. Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Sorry, I can't see you, so if you'd like to just make your way up to the microphone, first person. And bear with us while we iron out the bugs in the amplifier. Name, suburb, or organisation you present, you may start when you're ready, have 5 minutes.
Peter Scullough from Wellington Point. I'm just a local resident there, and I wanted to show my concerns. We had a meeting in December last year for that was organised by Dr. Diary issues such park. We had over 120 people attend that meeting on a rainy night, and I thought it was incredible that we got so many people to attend. It shows how much of an issue this is for the local residents here. We are constantly bombarded by loud antisocial behaviour, and we find that we need to have something done about it. And the only way we can do something about it, the police have said to us, take photographs and send them in for us. I've taken photographs. I've been abused when I've been taken these photographs. I feel threatened. All the people I speak to are threatened and feel threatened, and therefore will not take that action. I'm afraid that when I did take that photograph, they're going to follow me and find where I live, and I've had my house vandalised. So as a resident, we feel insecure because of the way the hooligans are now treating us here. We're not like we are 40 years ago, fit and able to stand up to these guys. We're generally an ageing population, and we're intimidated, and we cannot take that intimidation anymore. Council says it's a very safe area. In the paper it was reported, and that there isn't really a crime issue. Well, I take issue with that. If you've got to have 165 CCTV cameras on your assets, well, that's well and good for your financial assets. But what about your biggest asset, the people that you represent? You need to look after the people that you represent, and that's the only way to do that now in this day of technology, is to have CCTV cameras. By putting that there, you are putting in a great big incentive for people not to come there if they're going to have antisocial behavior. Look at New York. It was cleaned up. They have thousands of these cameras. Ipswich, Logan, they're doing the same thing. We're using technology. Police say they haven't got the time. I ring up the Hoon line, they never come. So, because they've got more important things like domestic violence issues to attend to. So we've got to be smarter. And the only way to be smarter is to be more, use the technology that's around now. So I implore council to really take on board our issue here to get CCT cameras installed at the Wellington Point Reserve. Thank you.
Thank you. We have one more speaker. Just a reminder, just to state your name and suburb or the organisation you represent, and you can start when you're ready. 5 minutes.
Berenice Dawson, Wellington Point. I would like to concur with the gentleman's comments. It is a very, very big problem at Wellington Point. It's one of the the highest rating places as well. But we have hooning up and down the road. They go on the wrong side of the dividers. They're a menace to children in the area. That's just the road, main road. Then you get to and weekends. It's
they are threatened and chased into the woods. So I would also implore council to design this with the seed season to be hidden so that they're not on people's houses and in the woods. But I don't know what else to say except it is a big problem. People are suffering, and the meeting showed a lot of people were concerned.
Thank you. All right, Councillor, just a motion now that we move back into our meeting procedures. Move Councillor Edwards, second to Councillor Elliott. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Elliott, sorry.
Now, before we go on, can I ask that we just go back to achievements of a couple of staff that's not working on so we've got 42 people.
Certainly, with Council's indulgence. Are you happy for that, Councillors? Councillor Elliott?
Appreciate it. Thanks, Councillors. Just want to let you know, 5 o'clock last night, you know, we put the Oakland Street Park, the development there, on our Facebook site. We've had 20,000 views, 15,000. The manager told me, he said, that is amazing. And actually, kind of, you know, so just put it up on the Oakland Park post was going bonkers over. So it's a fabulous, this is a good news story, really good news. What I'd like to do is thank a couple of the architects, Brad Salton's infrastructure team, particularly Claire Hardy, the architect who drew this. I put some stuff into it. And what I'd like to see is the centrepiece. She did the rest. Peter Honey said he was putting it on the ground. So I'd really like to thank those staff. But this is a great news story for council. It's just amazing.
Communications team that got it up on Facebook quickly and
absolutely, yep. Absolutely. 5 o'clock was up there, and we had 100 hits in the first hour. We had 400 in 4 hours, and I saw 500 this morning. But that's the actual figures I've got. Well done to our staff.
Thank you, Councillor Elliott. Okay, moving on to petitions and presentation. Now, councillors, I've been advised there are two petitions. Firstly, we have Councillor Mitchell.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I have a petition from the residents working Cleveland requesting that Council issue free all-day parking permits to those that work in the area.
Do you have a motion there, Councillor?
Yes, the proposed motion is that the petition is of an operational nature and be received and referred to the CEO for consideration.
Move Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Edwards. No discussion required. Put the motion, those in favour? Those against, motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Tolte's just left the room for that vote. Councillor Goller, you also have a petition.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I have a petition from residents requesting Council put into place traffic calming measures on Panorama Drive, Thornlands.
You have a motion for that, Councillor?
Yes, Madam Chair, that the petition is of an operational nature and be received and referred to the Chief Executive Officer for consideration.
So moved by Councillor Golay, seconded by Councillor Edwards. Any further comments? Being none, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously, and Councillor Hughes and Tolte are absent for that vote. I haven't been advised of that. If you have a petition, step ahead of me. We actually do have a couple of motions, I believe, to alter the order of business. Firstly, we have can we have a mover and seconder that 14.2 park naming request, Sandy Drive Creek Corridor, be discussed as the first item of business. Move Councillor Hewlett, seconded Councillor Boglari. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Hughes and Councillor Tolte are absent. Also have a... I'll alter the order of business, Councillor Boglari. Yep, you go for it.
Due to the public interest, can I also ask that item number 13.5, security camera policy, be brought forward as item number 2 then?
Sure. Move Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Bishop. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. unanimously. Councillor Golay, Councillor Tolte and Councillor Hughes are absent for that vote. Council, we also require a procedural motion. Can I please have a move of the item 19.1 of the general meeting of the 20th of June 2018 be removed from the table and discussed as item 19.4. Moved Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Those against? A motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Golay, Hughes and Tolte are absent for that vote. Declaration of interest on any items of business, councillors. Please refer yourself to the summary that should be in your agenda. You're reminded of your responsibilities in relation to a councillor's material personal interest and conflict of interest in a meeting. And obviously that refers to Division 5A of the Local Government Act 2009. Details of these responsibilities are outlined in the agenda, and I'd also like to remind you that declarations can be made any time throughout the meeting. Okay, councillors, so first item which has been moved forward is 14.2, and with that I'd like to declare a perceived conflict of interest, councillors. Sorry, councillors, if you leave the room you're going to have to catch up when you get in here. So item 14.2 has been moved as the first item of business on the agenda, which is the Sandy Drive Creek Corridor park naming request. I am now declaring a perceived conflict of interest, as Dan Holtzapfel has been a long-term family friend and also a donor to my 2016 election campaign, which is noted on my return lodged in April 2016. I'm proposed to exclude myself from this meeting. A vote should not be required for that while it's debated, and I'll now ask the Deputy Mayor to take the chair while that item is debated. We're new at this legislation. I didn't declare it was $1,000.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. We now move to 14.2, which has been brought to the front of the agenda, and could I please have a mover for that, please? Thank you, Councillor Tolte, seconded by Councillor Golly. Councillor Tolte, would you like to speak to it, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr Chair. The matter before us is 14.2, a park naming request, which has been received by Mr Raymond McAllister, who's made application that the Sandy Creek, Sandy Drive Creek Corridor Park, which is an ecological waterway parkland, elongated, that takes in Creekwood Street or comes off land at Creekwood Street, Sandy Drive, McKechnie and Brendan Way, be renamed to Dan Holtzapfel Park. Mr Holtzapfel is well known, and the Holtzapfel family in generally are well known across the Redlands. Mr Holtzapfel was named Redlands Citizen of the Year in 2018 and is a former Redlands City Councillor, or Redlands Shire at that time, finishing his tenure in 1973. He has devoted himself to the community over many decades through Rotary and the Redlands Foundation, and he's been one of the most significant contributors to the Rotary International Program for the eradication of polio. So his effect on the world goes beyond Redlands City considerably. He's also the most significant private donor to the expansion of the Redland Museum and the Redland Foundation to build transitional housing for families impacted by domestic violence. He has contributed to many local programs that have directly and indirectly contributed to the improvements to health and well-being of our community. Mr Holtzapfel is now residing in the Renaissance Retirement Village, which is located beside Sandy Drive Creek Corridor. And his home looks out on this ecological area. So I would recommend to Council that we do accept this application by Mr McAllister and rename this park to honour Mr Holtzapfel and his contribution to this community.
Thank you, Councillor Tolte. That was well said. Any speakers against? Any comments? Having said that, I'll move the motion. All in favour? Vote is carried unanimously, I assume, Councillor Mitchell. Thank you. With Councillor Williams absent from the meeting. Right now, I'd also like to receive a motion, please, to suspend the order of business to allow an official presentation to Mr. Holzapfel by Councillor Williams when she comes back into the room.
Sorry, Chair, the vote's taken place. Does that mean the meeting can come back?
Yeah, I'm just waiting to. Move Councillor Telfy, seconded by Councillor McGlory. All in favour? Thank you. I'll just bring the Mayor back in the room to continue the proceedings. Thank you.
I believe that the meeting proceedings have been suspended, and we want to take this opportunity to acknowledge an outstanding Redlander in all ways. If I could just read a little bit about Dan Holzapfel, and very privileged that he's been part of my life in a small way for a long time, and his sister Una. Dan spent most of his working life farming the Redlands with his late sister Una, and first on their father's block at West Mount Cotton, and then on the land they opened up in Capalabar. Dan literally put Capalabar on the map after buying a block there in the 1960s, near the spot now known as the Clock Tower. There he ran an Ampol garage and Ford dealership next to a general store which Una ran, and for those of you old enough, you'd probably remember there are pictures of that that are in our archives. He went on to develop the area into what was Capalabar's first shopping centre, then considered ahead of its time. That's the strip shops there on Old Cleveland Road. Dan has devoted himself to his community, racking up an impressive list of achievements, which probably we can't all list today here in this chambers, but as a Redlandshire councillor from 1964 to 73, he also became the president of Cleveland Rotary Club, earning Rotary International's highest distinction, and served on the Redland Ambulance, Birkdale District National Seniors, where he used to pick up my mother and take her along when she was still alive, despite the fact he was my mother's senior. And also the Shoreline Provost Club committees. He also helped develop the Redlands Museum along the way. Even after turning 90, the humanitarian and philanthropist would be among the Rotarians who actually rolled up his sleeves physically and literally got packing, stuffing containers and anything useful to the far-flung communities with much need, much greater than what we see here in our city. He's been a significant financial contributor to charitable causes, including the Redlands Rotary Foundation, International Foundation, and has been a major contributor to the elimination of polio across the world, and there's not too many people that wear that badge on their sleeve. Not to mention that just last year he also donated $100,000 to the Dinner en Rouge fundraiser to provide transitional housing for people in our community impacted by domestic violence. So the list goes on. So it's with great pleasure and honour and privilege, and I'm sure councillors will join me in acknowledging Dan, and we'll ask him to make his way up here very slowly, just to give him a bit of a feel of what having his name on a park might look like.
Madam Mayor, may I also just acknowledge Mr. Ray McAllister, who actually was the person that requested this park naming on behalf of Mr. Holzapfel.
Ray, you may want to come up. Sorry, Lance. Yep. Ray, would you like to come up as well?
And he was quite emphatic in chasing me up to make sure that it was going through the processes of council. So I certainly appreciate Mr. McAllister's acknowledgement of the massive contribution that Mr. Holzapfel has made to the city.
Thank you.
Dan, just letting you know, that's not the real sign. We are frugal in here, but not quite that frugal. Thank you so much, Ray, and thank you so much, Dan, for coming along. I know how much you enjoy being acknowledged, we are very grateful, and we're very much a richer community for everything you've done, not only for Rotary International and Rotary Club of Cleveland and Kapalabar, but of course the international community. So thank you so much. Okay, councillors, we will now need to resume our meeting proceedings. Can I have a mover and seconder, please, that we move back into our meeting proceedings? Move Councillor Mitchell, seconder Councillor Hewlett. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Which then moves us on to item 13.5. I'll let you find that in there, and I'll find it in my agenda as well, councillors, which is the security cameras. Have we got a mover and seconder for the officer's recommendation? Move Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Elliott. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
It's written.
It's been moved and seconded, that's correct. Well, okay.
Okay,
and then if there is a motion to amend, then we'll
do that
debate
afterwards.
That amendment.
Okay. Councillors, today we have an opportunity to bring about a change to our CCTV policy that the community have been clear and vocal about for some time, and that they want CCTV cameras in public areas. It's a complex matter. There's many issues arise, and I hope to address some of these. However, paramount to our role as elected members, it is clear to me that our community want council to facilitate the introduction of CCTV in public areas. You may or not agree with this, but that is the message I've been receiving and advocating since I've been a councillor. I'd like to address a few negative arguments that I anticipate in this debate. The first is that CCTV does not stop crime, and that's correct, it doesn't. But what it does do is provide evidence to identify the offender and enable a conviction. That in itself is a wider benefit to the community. It has also been said that it moves the problem elsewhere. I don't agree with this as an equal sum of moving 100% crime to 100% crime elsewhere. Most crime, particularly theft, is based on opportunity. A valuable scene inside a parked car is an example of what might trigger a theft. CCTV may deter some offenders. However, it does not mean they'll steal elsewhere. It's a crime of opportunity. The major deterrent for some councils to venture down the public CCTV model has been based on the cost of a 24-hour monitoring of cameras, which has cost other councils sums of money that this council simply cannot afford. This policy we are considering is based on non-monitored cameras. It's even better than this, as council has no involvement in monitoring the cameras. Zip, zero, nil. It's a policy based on other entities or agencies undertaking that role. The cameras could be linked into the TransLink network, for example, or they could stand alone and just be accessed by the Queensland Police Service. Another argument is that the Redlands has a low crime rate compared to other councils. That's true, and we are a safe city by comparison, but that argument is shallow and lacks compassion. If someone close to me was attacked, bashed, raped, or other deeply impacting experience, that will affect them for life. And the position taken by a councillor not to install TV camera was because other councils have a higher crime rate. I'd feel such an anger against such a position. The crime is a crime. It should not be taken in isolation, and its impact is not measured by the same frequency to others. That other councils' action to install CCTV camera in order to catch a criminal and take them off the streets is more important than our own residents, because it doesn't occur with the same frequency. What regard do we have for our own resident? The crime statistics is not a reason to vote against this motion. That is to remove you from a duty of care. The proposed policy also makes acceptance of the recommendation even easier when the cost of the cameras and installations is to be funded by grant applications through the federal government's Safer Community Fund that provides grants of up to $1 million to local government for security infrastructure programs. So this policy has cameras and installation funded by an external source, and the monitoring also done externally. All you need to do is to support this proposed policy, and you do so without risk and all the benefits to your community. All the benefits to your community. There are two more things. When we discussed the agenda yesterday, there was an express concern about supporting this policy around the failure to include antisocial behaviour in other parts of the policy document. What I'd like to say is that antisocial behaviour is a term that is interpreted differently by different people and is not necessarily a criminal offence. If you don't support the policy based on this wording, then you shouldn't throw away the opportunity for your community to obtain CCTV. All the provisions within the proposed policy encompass elements that will enable CCTV rollouts in many areas, such as Cleveland Point, Wellington Point, and other areas loved by our residents. If you vote against this motion because of those words, then you've locked the door on CCTV in these type of locations. There is one area of the policy that I think needs to be added to, but does not prevent the adoption of the policy today. We need to have constraints around where cameras go, based on evidence and need. Primarily, I see the Queensland Police Force as being the primary advisors of where cameras are needed. I'm not advocating for a proliferation of CCTV cameras throughout the city. It needs to be targeted and continually evaluated by the QPS for the greatest effectiveness against crime. I believe the officers will be able to work a procedure for this without amending the policy. For those councillors who may harbour concerns around CCTV surveillance, the facts are clear. CCTV is being driven by the community and not local government. We will always be challenged to deal with criminal activity, and this is just one tool to deal with that. It's clear to me that in this current age, we should expect the unexpected. When threats emerge without notice, where bad things happen to good people, where a small number of our community believe they have the right to do wrong, we need CCTV surveillance. Today, all of us have the opportunity to stand up and say, yes, this is a good policy and delivers for our community. This is something I've advocated since being elected as a councillor. This is a good policy. This is working for our community. This is what needs to be done. Councillors, please.
Councillor Edwards, speaker against. Speaker against, Councillor Boglari. So you need to move that amendment, Councillor, yeah. So Councillor Boglari has moved an amendment.
I'd like to... Is it up there? Yep, thank you. Councillors...
I'll need a seconder for that. Seconded. Councillor Hughes will expand it.
I am a little bit confused. I'm sorry, I hadn't seen that final one since I've been in here. I haven't been looking at my emails. My amendment motion was simply to have the words antisocial behaviour included in dot point one. But number two has been changed as well. Okay, yeah, all right. That's all I'm asking for, councillors, is the amended motion to have antisocial behaviour included, which will then have to have in 2B that sentence will have to be removed. Security cameras will not be prioritised by council to address traffic offences or antisocial behaviour.
So, Councillors, through the chair, yeah. Thanks.
That's what officers say.
As amended. That's it. That is it. The issue is that they've actually put the other points in there that actually are part of the recommendation. The amendment is in yellow, and you'll see that we've just added to the policy as amended.
I simply want the words antisocial behaviour included in one. I had asked for it
Correct.
To be in 1A, but I was advised by officers just to have one as its own dot point D.
Yep, which is Correct.
Because that's what's still happened. Gets included then as one.
Yeah, it's at one. It's at 1D according to that amendment. And if you go to the policy, you'll see the other yellow highlighted. It amends the policy accordingly.
To have not prioritised.
As amended.
Yep.
So we have a motion to move an amendment to the officer's recommendation. We'll need a seconder to that. Councillor Hughes. Now you can speak to it, Councillor Boglari. So we're now debating the amendment, councillors, not the whole motion, just the amendment.
Thank you, councillors. I mean, you've heard from the public today and you've heard from me for many years on the importance of using cameras as just one of the tools to curtail some antisocial behaviour, which is not just happening at Wellington Point, but across our city. I think we've all probably got some area. I'm not asking for it to be the be-all or end-all or the silver bullet, but it is definitely been proven to actually curtail behaviour, because every South East Queensland Council camera program policy that I have looked at with Logan, Gold Coast, Brisbane City Council and Ipswich all include the words antisocial behaviour, and enhancing community safety is in their first paragraphs. So I was very disappointed and frustrated when this policy came back, and I agree with the words of Councillor Edwards that at least now we have a policy to work with the Queensland Police Force with, and I agree with his words, but to have the words antisocial behaviour excluded and actually said not to be prioritised by council just shows that we are going for a low cost budget on this policy compared to what other councils are doing. The community has been working with the QPS. You heard from residents this morning how they've actually been using their own cameras. I don't feel it is an individual community member's responsibility to do this. We are not asking for full-time monitoring, as Councillor Edwards pointed out. That is not what we the policy requests. We are simply asking for cameras to be one of the tools that when something does happen, the police will be able to use the USB stick to actually get information to help with crime. In various areas across our city, we have had deaths, we have had missing persons, and the police have asked at that time, if there had been cameras, it certainly would have been helpful. So antisocial behaviour, it actually does have a large definition and does cover a lot. But if we have vandalism, theft and graffiti in here, I don't see why we haven't got antisocial behaviour also included. I'm hearing that as the policy is written, that it will cover this behaviour. I'm sorry, I don't want wordsmithing, I don't want reassurances, I actually want to see it. It has to be written in the policy, and the importance of having it in there is proven by the other councils, how they have worded their policies. Logan has very specifically, it is stated in a response to crime, safety and antisocial behaviour. I'm sorry, I am just totally miffed as to why it wasn't in here. I'm just asking today, with this policy, which I think every councillor agrees is needed, that we just include these words so that residents have some assurance that this crime is also covered.
Just before I take a speaker against the amendment, I'm just making sure that the words reflect exactly what's been stated in the motion. So I'll just ask the mover of the amendment and the seconder to read that and be comfortable with it. Well, just it's providing clarity to the as amended. Are you happy with that, Councillor Boglari? Councillor Hughes, councillors? Just to be really clear. Speaker against, Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I wouldn't mind an officer's a clarification after I've made my reasons. Generally speaking, and in the community...
Councillor Tolte, I might just ask Frank Pearce to come up the front, if that's okay. I know that there is a PowerPoint available if necessary, but just that way Frank can be hearing you and without the buzz in the back.
Generally speaking, within the community, we lump all of those things like noise disturbance, graffiti, acts of vandalism, lighting fires, etc., under the umbrella phrase of antisocial behaviour. And I understand from a communicative perspective that Councillor Boglari feels that
She might want those words in there so that those members of the community who feel affected and
Councillor Tolte, sorry, could I just get you to come back a little bit from that microphone? I'm not quite sure if that's causing the interference.
Okay.
We're just trying to deal with that as we speak. My apologies to those in the public gallery and to councillors.
Okay. No, it's fine. Thank you. and I can understand that from a communication. I'll just use my teacher voice and turn that off. Okay, so, but my concern is that this is a policy that directs the organisation of council as to how to assess applications or warrants from people that come in as to whether we should be rolling this technology out. And from that perspective, I don't believe that having the word antisocial behaviour in there will help those officers to make those determinations. I think it will confuse matters. What I think will happen is that, and this is something I'd like advice from the officers on, if antisocial behaviour is simply put in there along with all of those other triggers that they might consider, that's fine. But what's concerning me is that the way that this amendment has been written will determine that antisocial behaviour alone will be enough to provide that the officers need to put cameras in. We are not a council as the ones that have been compared with us. Apart from the crime rate, and I understand completely that we need to have empathy. We don't want our residents, especially our elderly residents, feeling vulnerable in their own homes because of where they live. But you can't compare a council that is the size of our council to a council that is 5 to 20 times larger. We cannot afford to put a camera on every corner, and we're not seeking to do that. And my concern is that the way that this amendment has been structured is that without regard for those other concerns, that antisocial behaviour alone will be enough of a trigger to provide that we need to put a camera up somewhere.
Speaker 4, Councillor Hughes. For the amended amendment, Councillor.
Yes, for the amended motion, thank you, Mayor.
Before I move on, you did ask for a councillor to respond. Councillor Officer
to
respond.
Yes, so I'd like to know, is the way this amendment structured going to be interpreted that, because the clauses that sit behind this in the policy, it's complicated for us to look at this yellow text and see the clause that sits behind it. The clause that sits behind it says basically that antisocial behaviour will be referred to the police and will not be a trigger. And if this is being changed so that now that is the trigger and can stand alone as a trigger, that is a concern.
Thank you, Councillor. Just to understand the reasoning behind this, we're aware that evidence, like long-term studies of CCTV, say they're actually most effective for, as Councillor Edwards rightly said at the start, they don't actually prevent crime. They're a tool to help in the prosecution of crime. And the evidence actually says that they're most effective for preventing property crimes in car parks. So from a public crime perspective, that's where we know that they are effective. So in terms of reducing antisocial behaviour, there's not a large body of evidence that suggests that that CCTV will actually prevent antisocial behaviour. And for an effective antisocial behaviour response, those cameras actually need to be monitored 24/7. And so this was the reasoning behind the exclusion of antisocial, because as you rightly say, we didn't want it to be a trigger like the first trigger, whereas the triggers would be more around what the property crime statistics would tell us in those car parks, where we know, hand on heart, that the CCTV will actually make a difference to the crime in those areas.
So on that, what I'm asking is, with this change, when an officer looks at this policy in 2 years or 3 years or 5 years, and a councillor comes along and says, oh, I've got kids hanging out on the corner of the street near the high school and I don't like it and they're antisocial, whatever definition is put on that, will the officer be required to put a camera up based on the definition that will come from this policy change?
Through the chair, thanks. Frank, that's a question for you, I think. So I guess there's one point to the motion. It says, does say subject to consent of both parties.
Good question, Councillor. I think that it would help, it would trigger a response on antisocial behaviour, which I've said we're not convinced of the effectiveness in that response.
Sure. Clarity, and then I'll go to Councillor Hughes.
Point number two addresses everything in point number one, and it says, subject to consent of both parties, enter into a memorandum of understanding with the Queensland Police Service. So having antisocial behaviour in number one means it would have to go under the same guidelines as any of the others, and it would only be with the consent of Queensland Police. It would not just say kids down the street are annoying as a It would have the same stringent controls as the Queensland Police. That's correct, isn't it? It would have to be subject to point number two, like everything else in point number one.
The police would just have to agree to
it. Yeah, the same. Well, the point's trying to be made that it would just be on every street corner for local chick kids having a Yahoo.
If it makes the police, if it makes the police officer's job easier, they could just consent to it. Not necessarily based on any other thing other than the fact that it's antisocial behaviour.
It would be the same controls as everything else that is mentioned in number one. No less, no more. So why are we trying to make out that it would be on every street corner and we're going to be...
Can I maybe reframe the question through to Frank and just to get clarity? And we're obviously really being specific about Wellington Point here this morning. Would this policy...
I think Councillor Hewlett would say some... the incidences he's having...
Councillor Boglari, thank you. I'm just asking, I'm trying to get through to the decision on the amendment. Would this amendment make any difference to the potential of security cameras being at a car park at Wellington Point or Victoria Point for that matter?
The amendment would shift the response... that we currently, so currently we're saying the response will be around crime data, around property damage. The amendment would shift the response to be not only the crime data and property damage, but also to what the reported offences of antisocial behaviour would be.
I have one more clarification from the officer.
You can wait to summing up on the amendment, Councillor. I'm going to go to other speakers for and against. Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for the conversation. I'll go back to our speakers, and I think it was Mr. Costello, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, he correctly mentioned the impact to our residents, and I think Councillor Boglari mentioned our residents, how the impact across the city, not just Wellington Point. I think it's important to mention that we're not just speaking about Wellington Point this morning. From my point of view in Division 8, I've got Judy Holt Rugby at the top car park. I think we've all seen and heard the hooning and the antisocial behaviour that goes on up there. I completely understand a policing matter. I completely understand that I can't stand up there at 10 o'clock at night, although I have, to stop the vehicles up there. In that particular car park, council has spent an enormous amount of money developing that car park. It's a beautiful car park. We've got a gate on that car park. It is not open to the public. I am speaking to the amendment. Yes, I support the anti-social behaviour words going into this amendment. We need to be able to address these hot spots. We need to be able to target, as it says here, an antisocial behaviour is one of our major issues and impacts on our residents late at night. That car park at Judy Holt, we've been able to resolve that quite easily with a gate at the top car park. But what that has meant, the knock-on effect, is that I've got one of the best car parks in the city, but it's locked to the general public. except for when the specific sports are there and they can open it. We're looking to put wheel stops up there as well to stop some hooning, but I understand the antisocial behaviour is far and wide across our city, and we need to do everything we can and word every policy document that we can to strengthen it as much to support our residents. Thank you.
Speaker against. I'm going to actually ask Graham to come up shortly, just put you on notice, Graham, because in point B, we're focusing on one point. If you read the policy, councillors, and if we're talking about Victoria Point, we're talking about Wynnum Creek, and we're talking about Wellington Point, I will bring your attention to item B in the policy under one. So where there are issues with parking and local law infringements, it would also facilitate discussions. And I'm pretty sure that members in the gallery this morning that have spoken in regards to their concerns would agree that point B actually ticks the box. Well, you don't. This is why I'm going to ask Graham Simpson to talk about infringements at these places in regards to parking, etc. I guess what I know that we have got hotspots, and I acknowledge that, and that's why we've got a policy here. What we don't want to do is create a larger rod for our back that deals with more than what we need to address those particular issues. So I'm just going to ask Graham Simpson, in regards to local law infringements at some of our most loved reserves across the city, I'm not quite sure how you're going to illustrate that, but we obviously have compliance officers at those areas on a fairly regular basis, if not daily, weekly.
Sure. Oh, Graham, can I just ask when our parking infringement officers are actually down there at midnight? How many times a year they go down there at midnight? Because that's when the antisocial behaviour happens. So I'm just wondering how the...
Not arguing that point. We're just saying that that would allow us to consider putting security cameras there. That is
but
a trigger.
It's not just the parking. You can do a drug deal in 5 minutes, so they can still be parking there.
That's right, but it's not what... You need to understand that if we are sending our local laws officers out to write parking tickets at any time of the day, that triggers the opportunity for us to have a discussion, triggers the policy. Point B, which is high up in the priority, would trigger the policy for us to consider putting security cameras there. Those security cameras would be rolling all the time. It's not just to be in the working hours to replace officers. They would be there as a result of that. So that's what I was trying to explain yesterday. There are other triggers in those areas where we have those hotspots, which is generally in those most loved areas in the reserves, etc., on our points, that would actually trigger that. I guess what I'm trying to say, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's opportunities for Wellington Point, Wynnum Creek, Victoria Point that have these issues based on point B to have the consideration of security cameras, not 24/7 monitored, because we've all agreed that that's not feasible for a size of our council, but at least to be able to collect video, etc., of what's happening in those places. And I'll just ask Frank if...
Not every area is in a car park, that's the issue.
So what are you expecting? Where do you expect...
I'm expecting the words antisocial behaviour to go in there, so that we are...
Councillor, I'm asking you to understand that what you're trying to achieve is going to be achieved as a result of another item that's already in there.
No, because other antisocial behaviour areas that I know of aren't in car parks. So that parking part will not cover it.
The crime or other local laws? Okay. Speaker, I had a speaker against Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Mayor. The term antisocial behaviour is very subjective, and I'm very cautious about putting that into the wording of the motion. I think we know understanding the intent of the policy, and I'm happy to stick with the officer's recommendation. I don't need to go this far. Look, we see on social media platforms and residents say to us every now and then, you know, with something as simple as three teenagers riding their bikes in the school park, car park on the weekend, saying very antisocial. Where do you stop? You highlight the term in the wording of the motion, and I think it raises community expectation too far. I would say, but we all understand the intent of the policy.
Speaker for the amendment. Council Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I honestly believe we're quibbling over semantics here. The community understand antisocial behaviours, things like graffiti, property damage. It's an umbrella of statement, but I think for the community to understand and accept what policy we're approving here, that wording needs to be in there so that they understand what we're doing. It's not necessarily that we're going to, it's quite clear that we're not going to respond to every antisocial complaint with a camera. But the fact is that wording should be in there. Look, as the Mayor pointed out, I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but I certainly don't see any harm with that statement being written into the motion.
Can I just bring your attention back to the item in the policies, item 1, A, B and C? So item A is protecting property against crimes such as vandalism, theft and graffiti occurring on council-owned and controlled infrastructure buildings and public spaces. B, local law infringements such as illegal dumping and parking, interactions between the public and staff in and around council. It's just so we know what we're talking about. Speaker against, Councillor Bishop.
Madam Mayor, I'm certainly not speaking against safety. I'm speaking specifically to this antisocial provision.
And it needs to be, yeah, the amendment, thank you.
Yeah, relating to the amendment. So I'll discuss the issue later when we get into the broader discussion. I have a question. My reason for not supporting antisocial behaviour as an inclusion, in order to make that point, can I ask legal advice? Because I believe this is a decision that we're using words, and yes, the issue of semantics has been raised. I think there is a perception going out into the community that what we're doing today is going to alleviate the issue, but I believe it's going to be a legal issue, and it will be contested in future. And I would like an answer to us making this decision today to include antisocial behaviour. Does that open up a broader likelihood that council could be held responsible for managing, monitoring, policing and taking responsibility for future costs associated with antisocial behaviour in our public spaces?
Heather.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. There's the maintenance and monitoring of the cameras will depend on the arrangement under which the cameras were installed. So if we install the cameras at the behest of a community group who have perhaps received a grant, we allow them to install the infrastructure on our property, or at the behest of the police and the information goes directly to them, TransLink, it will be dealt with individually in accordance with So it's difficult to give a blanket statement in that regard. But certainly this policy doesn't necessarily go into details about maintenance, monitoring, things like that. The policy seems confined to when we will consider the installation of a camera and in those circumstances how we'll deal with it.
If I may, if we fast track to a future after making a decision today about supporting cameras and supporting antisocial behaviour, and if we result in 10, 20 years down the track, 50,000 cameras across the city, and we make this decision today, if we have relationships, ad hoc, one-by-one relationships with 50,000 camera owners, is it likely that in the court of law, some external body would say, this council approved 50,000 cameras in this city. They would need to take responsibility for managing and monitoring and dealing with the use of cameras in the public realm. Is that more likely with the inclusion of antisocial behaviour. We're not just putting cameras on our own infrastructure to deal with issues to do with desecration, those things.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And you're absolutely correct. It is a difficult question to answer, short of, you know, looking to the future. Whatever legislative regimes occur, will occur, it's difficult to foresee them. But I would think council cameras on council infrastructure would make up a relatively small percentage of the CCTV in the community. You know, there's TransLink, there's the police. Even if the policy is approved in whatever amended form, I still wouldn't believe that we would have the majority of the council, the cameras in the community, but again, difficult to say.
And so that comes back to why I would argue that antisocial behaviour being included in a council policy that suggests that we police antisocial behaviour is not appropriate, and I have other thoughts about cameras, one of which has been highlighted by the fact that this is an ethical issue that will be contested in future with some other entity holding the decision makers on days like today when we approve the initial inauguration of cameras allowed in our city to account. And that is a concern I'll address when we debate the issue. But that's the reason why I don't support the inclusion of this amendment.
Do we have any speakers for the amendment? Any other speakers? Okay, I noted Councillor Golay wanted to make an observation. Okay, so I'll give everyone a notice. So Councillor Golay had his hand up earlier, and then Councillor Elliott, and then Councillor Mitchell.
Thanks, Madam Chair and colleagues. So first of all, for my mindset, it doesn't matter which way we go, but I think we are sort of looking at some semantics here. We're trying to slice and dice this in a way. Look, in the south, and just this morning, I received some messages in relation to another matter, but crime was raised as one of the issues in that. Last week and this week, Victoria Point and Thornlands was impacted by a spout of break and enters. Now, there's four elements that helped bring those particular people to arrest. One was neighbourhood watch, where the residents were actually quite vigilant and supported each other and spoke to their neighbours about what was going on. So it becomes public awareness. They then use social media to advise the general population, which we as councillors were able to share. Then the police were engaged as well. And then finally, there was the private use of privately installed cameras on private residents that the police, by way of submission, were able to ask for permission to take that from the resident and use to prosecute the case, and ultimately there was five people arrested for the break and enter.
So just reminding you to talk to the amendment, Councillor.
I am. Look, Madam Chair, I just think that ultimately some of these councils who have got all these cameras in place and have listed antisocial behaviour as one of their characteristics, it's actually pushing crime to us anyway. It's pushing it out of that area across to us where we don't have the cameras. So, as I'm saying, irrespective of how we slice and dice this policy, to target hotspots is relevant. And we also need to keep in mind that antisocial behaviour as it stands is unaccepted behaviour on social norms. What we perceive as being antisocial may not be perceived by somebody else as antisocial. There's a huge difference between someone going out there playing loud music and drinking a can of Jim Beam at midnight to someone conducting willful destruction of public property or private property. One's a crime, one's not. So we're sort of looking at how do we slice and dice and fix everything with a camera. Under the camera surveillance privacy of the Office of the Information Commissioner of Queensland, if we install cameras, there's no hiding them. You have to put them out there in plain sight and put signs up that state that you are possibly under CCTV surveillance. So that in itself, to my mindset, would actually deter antisocial behaviour. Unless, of course, like what was demonstrated last week, people who have a very much an intent, irrespective of how much surveillance, police, social awareness or neighbourhood watches in place, they had the intent to commit crime and they went ahead and did it. And I think if what we're discovering, some of these hotspots, is very clear intent, what I don't want to see is council suddenly, you're the policeman for every little bit of information that comes through our doors, like it does now, where we get hit with every state and federal matter that comes through the doors, that we're supposed to be held responsible for it. Who would the residents call if someone's doing burnouts in the car park down at Wellington Point? Would they call the Hoon line or call the council? Because council's put the CCTV in and they've got a policy to say that we're going to protect the community. There's so many different facets to this from a legal aspect and the various levels of government. This goes beyond just throwing up a few cameras. So I'd like to see the policy go either way. But from my mindset, this policy is just allowing other avenues or other agencies to actually have access to our land in order to install CCTVs. I can't see it as us spending $2.5 million to go and put things up there that may or may not deter crime.
That was kind of speaking to the amendment and against it at the same time.
That's what I'm saying, Madam.
Councillor Elliott,
we're trying to split this both ways, but you can't, are the facts.
At one point you need to make a decision, so that's okay. Councillor Elliott. Councillor Mitchell, and then I've got Councillor Edwards.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. What he said. I can't support the amendment today for two reasons. One, we're told by the officers it'll probably be ineffective for its intent, and I think there will be separate and enough triggers in points
no
A, B.
No point of order then, because that was incorrect. The officer actually said if it was in there, it would allow any social behaviour to be more discussed with the police. So that was an incorrect.
The officer
statement.
Actually said that
he
evidence.
He wrote down his words.
Evidence. I'll let the officer respond. The officer said that evidence shows that having cameras for antisocial behaviour is not effective.
Councillor Mitchell actually spoke to saying if this was in here, well, you just said having this in here wouldn't highlight it, whereas the officer said it would.
Correct. You're right. It's not a point of order. Continue, Councillor Mitchell.
Thank you. Secondly, I think we've got it. I think the residents, we've got you covered largely with enough evidence from points A, B, and C. So the policy, I think, is going to help you. And then acknowledging the residents. I mean, there's not a person in this room that doesn't hear you and doesn't feel that. We're all frustrated and angry that sometimes there's not a sufficient police response. And I think I wish those presentations were at the Queensland Parliament or at the doorstep of your state members, so please do that, because your council needs the support of the state members there too. So I think the and I think therefore, yeah, we can't take the responsibility for those police matters on. We want to spend ratepayers' money on the things that councils are responsible for, and I think the I'll speak against this amendment, but we'll be certainly supporting the policy, which I think will go a long way to meeting the public concerns that are existing. Thanks.
Councillor Edwards.
No, thank you. I'll be quick. If the policy had come out and had antisocial behaviour, I'd have no problem. What's most important for me is to see this policy. And the talk that I've heard from other councils support the amendment is going to risk this policy going through. If there was, and what's the overriding thing for me is this policy yet. And so the only reason I'm not supporting the amendment is because I don't want to risk this policy going through. A lot of councillors here in this group have would probably want to support the future process.
Councillor Woodson, if I could just acknowledge the concerns of residents that have spoken this morning. And I believe this is a policy. This is, you know, council can make decisions outside of this policy if they wish by resolution. So there's always that option with the policy. We don't encourage it. But if there are specific circumstances, then it can come to this table and it can be discussed, debated and decided. I'm going to concur with much has been said in regards to policing. And having been a local councillor and dealing with things, and as mayor, dealing with things such as hooning, speeding, etc. I know that Councillor Elliott had specific roads in his area. I certainly had them in Councillor Gleeson's area, like Cretona Road. And I speak highly of police in our city. I'm married to one, so it would be dangerous for me not to speak highly of police. might be a conflict. He doesn't deal with security cameras. I'll put that on the record. But you know, whatever we do to make their job easier, of course they're going to agree to it. We've heard of police being in Wellington Point, for example, encouraging council to put up cameras. Why? Because it means that they don't have to actually be there as much as they probably need to be. Similarly with hooning. You know, why come and see us to deal with street traffic calming? Exactly the same reason. It means that they don't have to have people actually dealing with it, and that is what the state government's responsibility is. It's to deal with policing and have the relevant number of police to deal with issues. Acknowledging that antisocial behaviour is probably something that police don't want to deal with. They have much bigger fish to fry. But what that means to us then is that we are lumbered with the potential of not just dealing with what has been identified as hotspots, and many of the places spoken today probably meet the original policy anyway, but Councillors and the public need to understand that if we start picking up the role of policing, it comes at a cost to your rates. We don't have a magic money tree at the back of Cleveland here. Your rates go up. And it's not just the installation. We've heard about being able to get grants. So if you want to have a camera to deal with every incident that the police agree to that involves public nuisance, antisocial behaviour, beware. You'll get a grant. The government's always going to give you grants for capital. But councillors, I remind you how much our depreciation bill is right now. About $60 million. That's what ratepayers have to get out of their back pockets each year, just for depreciation. Maintenance. So when that person comes along and throws a rock at that camera, it won't be the state government giving you money for that. It will be ratepayers having to dig into their savings, into their pension account, whatever it might be, to fund that. So I absolutely agree we need a policy. I absolutely agree we need to have security cameras in the right place for the right reason. But we don't need to proliferate it, and there's a risk of proliferation if we add this one element of antisocial behaviour, because I think where there's antisocial behaviour in the instances I've heard about, it already ticks either A, B or C. You add another one, you potentially, with police wanting us to help them do their job and always happy to partner with them, but they're not going to be picking up the bill in the future for the job that we're doing for them. You know, we don't like coming around to budget time and increasing our rates. And let me tell you, this needs to be targeted, specific, and that's the policy that officers have put to us to allow us to deal with the issues that we've been hearing about, that we've been bagged about on social media by other members of government. This deals with that, and it gives council the opportunity to do that. Now, if it doesn't and there's a unique circumstance, you can bring that back to council and we can debate the merits based on the policy we have and what's not covered. But if you open up the door, you know, special line on your rates notice. State government policing levy. I'm not going there. I want to make sure that we do what we're responsible for doing, and we do it at less, the least cost to our ratepayers. So with that, I don't support the amendment. I do support what Councillor Edwards is saying in regards to having a process, a framework, so that we can go and talk to police, we can go and talk to TMR. And in fact, I've already been doing that. Rather than the useless banter on social media, I've sat down with senior people in police, senior people in TMR, and say, how can we partner to achieve what our community is asking us to do? And you know what? It's actually that easy. And this policy that's been presented by officers without the inclusion of the amendment actually allows us to do that. And that's what I would be encouraging all state, all levels of government to do, is work with us, not pass the buck, and together collaboratively we can address those issues, making sure we know who's responsible for what. With that, I'll hand back to Councillor Bogbury to sum up on the amendment, then we'll take a vote on the amendment, councillors.
I don't even know where to begin. I don't think I have been more disappointed in this council in my 10 years of being in here. The point absolute...
What's your point of order, councillor?
Councillors having a go at council sort of thing, I think.
Okay, councillors. Councillor Bogleri, I'll ask you to sum up. Thank you. On your amendment.
I have written down so many points, which... there's just this inaccuracy being put out here today. Number one, it's not going to be on every street corner. It's going to have exactly the same assessment as any other item mentioned there, your vandalism and everything else. So we will have to go through the same stringent assessment before we put a camera in for it. No one is saying this is a silver bullet and it's going to alleviate it. We are saying this is one tool. We are saying this is just one tool in possibly helping to decrease the impact of antisocial behaviour on our residents across the city. To keep hearing that residents are going to think this is a silver bullet, no one has said that. So I don't know where councillors are getting that idea from. To say it is covered by having the parking, I'm not going to rely on parking issues to deal with antisocial behaviour. Not every issue not every area that has antisocial behaviour actually has parking issues there or illegal dumping So I don't know how you can expect us to rely on parking to be it. Future legal concerns, I think council needs to be more concerned about climate change legalities coming in the future than we do about this. Every other council has the words antisocial behaviour in their policies, so they're not worried about future legalities on it. It was acknowledged by the officer when they spoke that if having the words antisocial behaviour in here, it will give it some credence to actually be spoken about with the QPS and not just relying on the others. So we have acknowledged having it in there will give us more certainty that at least it can be addressed. And recently I thought council actually applied for a grant for cameras at Capella Bar to deal with antisocial behaviour. So council acknowledges that cameras do help. Otherwise, why did we apply for that grant?
Councillor, I'll get the officers to... That was actually live monitor by police. And it, Capella
but we Bar, agreed it
Capella Bar
help.
Place is a council asset.
And so is the car park and the infrastructure at our point.
Exactly. I made that point earlier. So you don't need any social behaviour to deal with the issues that you're talking about.
Yeah, so we're saying... So we have acknowledged that cameras do assist in decreasing antisocial behaviour.
If they're monitored, Councillor. If they're monitored.
And when there is an issue, the USB can be given to police to have the evidence given to them for prosecution or whatever the police want to do with it. Residents are not asking for cameras to be along Main Road, which was also suggested. Residents are saying that if the destination of Wellington Point isn't as attractive, the hooning on Main Road will stop. The only reason why they go down there is to muck around down at the end. And councillors, the residents do not continuously ring me. They are ringing the Hoon hotline. I think the ones that were in the gallery here today, I could ask any of them what that number is and they'd be able to say it off the top of their heads. They've rung it that many times. The police cannot do this on their own. And yes, they're not resourced enough. And I don't just go on Facebook banter. I too have written many letters and had many meetings on this subject for 10 years. The police need our support with this. The state government, I was down there with Don Brown and Kim Richards recently talking to them about it. And I'm asking for grants to cover it. So why would this cost any more than the other issues that we've got in the policy? I put on Facebook when I saw this was on the agenda. I didn't share it with anybody else. I just wanted to see the reaction from the people on my site. There are over 100 comments. It's one of the first times in 24 hours I've had more comments than likes. And it comments like, yes, we need this, but also, why can't Redland City Council put antisocial behaviour in our policy like everybody else? Why is council 10 years behind everybody else? And that's my question too. I've got so many notes here about stuff that was said, which to me was just like fear-mongering about putting antisocial behaviour in here was going to just blow it out of proportion. We're going to have cameras everywhere. It's going to increase our operational spend that much more than the whole lot. I disagree with it. And I'm really begging you to please come on board and support having antisocial behaviour mentioned in here. So residents realise we actually do value them.
Point of order,
because
Mayor.
I think that's what it comes down to.
What's your point of order, Councillor Gleeson?
Mayor, the council is suggesting that we don't value our residents.
What's your point of order? It's not a point of order, Councillor.
Nice.
And I've had many things not very nice said to me in here. Well, the residents... I don't even know how to stress this. I'm absolutely flabbergasted at the comments and the attitude today. I'm sorry if that's another point of order.
I'll just ask you to now sum up, Councillor. I think you've pretty much covered most of the comments that you wanted to make.
The officer stated before that if antisocial behaviour is mentioned in here, along with the other issues that were listed, it will give the opportunity for us to assess these areas with the police. They're not going to go in willy-nilly everywhere. It will be after the same stringent assessment that the other areas will have. And I would just... I'm guess I'm even begging for the support on this to have any social behaviour put into this amendment, into the motion.
Just to be clear on what the officer said earlier, Frank, before we put the amendment motion, antisocial behaviour is it's only effective to reduce antisocial behaviour is only effective if those cameras are monitored. And to have them monitored comes at in the millions of dollars. If it's not monitored, it's not as effective. That was what the officer said, just to be really clear. So with that, councillors...
Am I allowed to comment?
No, I'm just clarifying the point you said, because that's what the officer actually said. It comes at a cost. They need to be... If you want to deter, catch antisocial behaviour, it requires monitoring, and that will be the next step.
Well, what's the difference with vandalism then?
Vandalism
if vandalism
is
isn't monitored, how are we going to know
vandalism,
when the vandalism is happening? It's the same. It's you're giving an argument for any social behaviour that could be used on any of the others that are stated there. I don't know why any social behaviour is just being selected.
Because vandalism normally means damage to property, which then has insurance implications. We've had the debate.
Can I put the motion, please?
I'm just about to do that, councillor. You don't need to do that. We are now voting on the amendment, councillors. The amendment fails. It will go back to the original officer's recommendation. So I put the motion, those in favour of the amendment, councillors. Those against? The motion has failed. The amendment motion has failed. Those in favour of the amendment, Councillor Boglari, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Hughes. Those against? Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams. We now revert to the original motion. Is there further discussion required on that, councillors? Councillor Tolte, you've got a comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I understand Councillor Boglari's disappointment with the previous motion, but...
Councillor Boglari, please, that's through the chair.
Councillor, I can argue...
Councillor Tolte.
I can argue, and I'm not going to go back and re-prosecute the motion that we've already voted on. All of the matters that I've heard raised here today by Councillor Boglari, by the residents in the public gallery, and by Councillor Hughes can be covered, and the outcome that they're seeking can be achieved under this policy as it sits with this motion. The point, and I'm not going to re-prosecute something we've already voted on, but every argument that was put in the previous matter in support of the change can be argued in reverse. All of these matters can be achieved with this policy, and though there is nothing that cannot be achieved with this policy that could have been achieved with the previous amendment. So, therefore, I'd say to them that this is a win. You've got something that's very... workable, but also makes the point that we are local government, that we can't take on policing and responsibility for all of those matters that maybe need more funding from state and federal government, but we can play our role to support our residents. So, I will be voting in support. Thank you.
I'm taking some comments. Councillor Bishop.
Yes, a question, if I may, to... officers, given that policing in the public realm is a matter for the police, is there anything that prevents the police from identifying places where they would like to put a camera in this city and doing that as without this policy? Is there anything that prevents them from doing that?
Thanks, Councillor. No. At this, without the policy, the police wanted to put a camera on a council asset, they would need to seek permission from the appropriate asset owner and would be able to put a camera on that asset with the understanding that it will be completely their responsibility. The policy just clarifies that point.
I think that's an important point to make, because policing is responsibility of the police. It's not council's responsibility. In future, it will be contested that if council is supporting the introduction or inclusion of a policy to create opportunities for cameras to exist in places that are not supported by or endorsed by what can already currently happen. If we open this up, I believe this is the foot on the sticky paper moment. In relation to cameras generally in the public space is something that council takes responsibility for, allowing people to have access, to play freely, to do as they so wish. And of course, we expect morally people to behave. We want them to behave ethically. We want them to do the right thing. Putting cameras in is not going to make that happen. In fact, in terms of cameras in the public realm, they have been proven in the past to not be effective in deterring crime. They are potentially susceptible to abuse, which could be criminal abuse, it could be institutional abuse by overzealous authorities in future times, abuse for personal purposes with people potentially able to hack into what is a very new technology. The ethics of this is not being tested yet, and I think we should avoid stepping into territory which we in future will be held accountable for in some future courts of law as people go, well, what's the one common element among all the cameras that have come in this city, and the one thing that's outside of the police's ability to currently do what the police need to do is that we've created a policy to enable a proliferation of cameras potentially. There's potential for discriminatory targeting, for voyeurism. The third major point is a lack of limits or controls on camera use. What are those limits and controls that we are putting in place? Unless we are absolutely rock solid and specific about the legal parameters of where this could play out, roll out, be hacked, have all sorts of things go on, we are in ethically unclear territory, and we are the common element in the decision making by supporting this policy, and we will be held accountable and have to pay the foot of the bill. Video surveillance changes public behaviour in public places. Yes, in some instances it will be a disincentive to crime, but in other instances there's a whole heap of other things that people want to be able to do in the freedom of the open space, the public space, that they will feel, oh, maybe I shouldn't, and it's going to change the tenor of this city in a way that I don't think is appropriate. And there's currently a lack of clarity about the liabilities and risks. We're not clear about them. Hear our discussion today. We're not clear. I think we need to let the other areas consider the legal issues, the moral issues, the ethical issues. And when the police need to identify a problem, they can come to us and they can say, here's what we want to address, and we can approve something now. We don't need this policy, and I believe that in future this will be a decision, if we support this today, that will come back and we will be held accountable for a huge potential cost with no real benefit that's been demonstrated in the history of cameras to actually be effective. Having said that...
Sorry, that was speaking against it, Councillor?
Yes, speaking against it, but certainly not in any way speaking against the fact that residents want to feel safe, have every right to feel safe, and that is our councillors' moral obligation. But the current expectation that cameras is going to fix it is not proven.
Councillor Boglari, you had your...
I'm professional enough not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. At least we finally got a camera policy, and it does address some things, so it will be supporting what we've got here. But I'd just like to say again, I do not believe it is strong enough to achieve what we need to achieve. I will not be giving up on this, because I do believe any social... And to have it actually written in there will not be prioritised. Actually, getting under my skin is probably the most polite thing I can say in chambers. I will support this because I do believe at least it covers some of the aspects that need to be covered, but I will continue to have meetings with officers, and I'm really disappointed for my residents. And their mental health has actually been affected. I've seen personalities change due to the effect of what's going on in their area. So again, I voice my disappointment, but I will support it because at least it does something. But I do believe more work needs to be done in this area.
Thank you, Councillor Boglary. My next speaker is Councillor Gleeson. Councillor Golay? Okay, are you putting your hands up in anticipation of a vote, are you? I thought you put your hands up to comment.
No, I thought I was actually next in line.
You were. Thank you, Councillor Gleeson. Well, you did put your hand up to comment, so I'm giving you that opportunity. Do you want to comment or not? Are you withdrawing your desire to speak?
Yeah, thanks, Mayor. I'll reply to a comment that Councillor Bishop said, and that was the council takes all responsibility or takes responsibility for public spaces, and absolutely we do. You know, we take responsibility for trying to establish attractive places for residents to go to. We take responsibility for reducing risk where we can, but we certainly can't take the actions of or the responsibility of the actions from individuals. That is definitely a policing matter, and in this case, you know. Our role is not to police, but if we can provide a bit of assistance to the police, I think that's a good thing. I don't understand. I mean, the cost of supply and install of these things can't be that high. I don't understand why we have to wait on federal government grants to get them rolling. There's certainly...
Councillor Boglary, just refrain from not speaking through the chair. Thank you. Well, you're making up for me, thank you. Well, I asked you to be respectful and professional, as you've just said you were trying to be earlier. So thank you, Councillor Gleeson. You may finish.
Thanks, Mayor. You know, we've certainly got a couple of hotspots throughout the city. I think we should be acting straight away. I mean, this stuff about sitting down at Wine Creek ready to go, I mean, they should be installed the day they were delivered. If we haven't got the ongoing cost of monitoring them, let's just get them up, get them working, get them active.
It's not a point of order, but Councillor, that's probably need to investigate the facts behind that.
Well, that's certainly a hotspot that I can't see why we haven't actioned that already ourselves. And there's a couple of spots through the city where we could do that. Other areas, yeah, I mean, you know, if we're concerned, like Capalba Library, Capalba Place, we want to wait for funding agreements, absolutely, but I'd like to see us action some of these hotspots quicker.
Councillor Golay?
Oh, thanks, Madam Chair. Just very quickly, I'll support the introduction of the new policy. But I just wanted to respond to some of Councillor Bishop's statements, please. So, first of all, every level of government is going to have a certain level of responsibility as far as surveillance and protection to the community. Yes, there is a risk mitigation factor as far as cyber security goes, the minute you install some sort of digital data collection device, but I sort of draw the line at the Big Brother's watching. Big Brother's already watching. It's called ASIO. They have the domestic capacity.
Called Google.
To monitor and investigate any member of the public domestically. We're talking about the introduction of a tool, just as a GPS is an aid to navigation. We're talking about a piece of hardware that can be installed to help eradicate crime or behaviours, and as I supported, antisocial behaviour, any behaviour that's not felt to be acceptable by the community. But there's also laws around that as well. The capturing of that information and the quality it's got to be before it's presented to court as evidence. There's lots of factors. This is why Logan City Council has invested so much into their cameras. And I think they actually quoted something like $2,500 for one camera so that it was protected, it was encased, it was vandal-proof, it was able to be Wi-Fi connected and Bluetooth connected and track a perpetrator from one street to the other, etc., etc. You're talking about massive investment. All we're talking about, it's a little globe that's going to sit on a post. And the expectation from the public is that it's going to solve every single piece of technology or crime factor or whatever, and that's based on the social media comments. I'm going to support this so that we can actually work with other agencies and levels of government in order to install a tool that will help us as an aid to reduce crime and antisocial behaviour.
That That was another speaking to and against at the same time, I think. Yeah, because we need to make a decision. Councillor Mitchell, did you have your hand up? Sorry. No. I'm not taking... did you have your hand up? I'm okay. Councillor Hughes.
I'm going to speak against this policy document and motion. When we just laboured long and hard about the, adding the words antisocial behaviour, and that motion was sadly defeated, and I'm sorry that it didn't gain the support that I thought it was worthy of as well. When we go down to item 2.B and that bottom sentence, security cameras will not be prioritised by council to address traffic offences, I've got no issue with that, or antisocial behaviour. I think it's just a really bad message to the community and I don't support it at all.
A message the police should be reading. Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm going to vote for this policy. And I think the important thing to note is that a lot of the social issues are police issues. And in that respect, I've spoken to our state member and we're going to run community safety forums in Victoria Point and on Coochie Mother Island in my division to explain to people how the whole system works. Because I think the community out there want to know the data. They want to know how many police are on the ground, what the response times are expected. You may recall that recently I've had three quite serious issues on Coochie Mother Island. The police haven't responded in under 24 hours. So they're putting these new boats in at Redland Bay. They're putting extra police on Russell and Maclay Island. But Victoria Point, a major shopping precinct, doesn't seem to get the patrols, or Coochie Mother doesn't seem to get the attention that it deserves. So we're going out to the community and explaining to them the data and the statistics and try and hold the police a little bit accountable for some of the stuff because it's largely their responsibility.
Almost. I know you're keen. Just there's a couple of points made early in regards to risk and liability and future concerns. I'm advised by officers that in putting together this policy, we've taken extensive advice from the Office of the Privacy Commissioner to ensure that we do comply and therefore our risks are minimised. And obviously these things can change and it's a moving piece and we'll obviously need to be aware of those changes as they occur. And I guess I just concur with most things that have been said, that you know, this is a room where we try to find compromise. Most important thing is we have a document now that officers can relate to without having to go through a lengthy process of a one-by-one approach coming to council. It gives them direction. It certainly sends a message to police and other agencies. And for what it's worth, the model that is in front of us right now and the model that I've personally spoken to with senior officers of police, QPS and TransLink TMR, is exactly the model and the memorandum of understanding they are working on with Logan City Council. We've heard that referred to a few times. I believe that model and that memorandum of understanding will allow us to address some of the concerns we've heard here today as well from members in the public gallery. So I think this is a positive outcome for those people who have concerns. It is a place where we've found some compromise, but not completely put our foot on the sticky paper and taking on the role of what I believe should be state government policing, but at the same time protecting our assets that ratepayers invest in every year and we have to maintain and replace on their behalf. So it's a way forward, it's certainly not a step backwards, and I acknowledge that it's been a difficult debate for some councillors, but that's what this room is all about. It's finding that space where we can all be satisfied with a way forward for officers to be directed. So with that, I'll hand back to Councillor Edwards.
Thank you, Madam. I'd like to say that this policy is a monumental shift in council's position since I've been here for 6 years. We've had to have for all CCTV and other councils have been. I would like to urge those councils who consider not to vote for this on the basis of those voices. All the record will show is you voted against something that you advocated for and you want to achieve. We have to remember that once this policy goes in place, we'll have the opportunity to evaluate how it works. And all policies come back to reviews. At least this gets a policy where we can get CCTV in one of the places that are needed in the city. And I believe places such as Montauk will be there. It might not be that's wrong. But to have the policy support in is a huge shift from where we've been in the past. And allows you do support CCTV surveillance, don't jeopardise the school.
Thank you, councillors. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Williams. Those against? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Bishop. Thank you, councillors. Moving on to item, thank you, Frank, and thank you, Graham, for coming forward. Yep. Councillors, I need a mover and seconder for item 12.1, please. Move Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
I move the officer's recommendation to note the report. I will have a seconder.
Move Councillor Tolte. You may speak to it, Councillor Edwards.
This is an interim report prior to the finalisation of the end of year accounts. The report states that there is expected to be significant movement through the finalisation of accruals, deferrals and other end of year adjustments over the coming weeks. There is probably little constructive comment I can make on these figures as the final result won't be reflected until the audited annual financial statements. From any opinion subject to the audited statements, I'd like to say the results are reflective of the initial budget projections. I'll reserve further comment until those statements are presented later in the year.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Any speakers against? Question, Councillor Elliott? Councillor Elliott. Deb, would you speak to the amendment, please?
Absolutely, Madam Chair, and thank you for the opportunity. Thank you, Councillor Elliott. Unfortunately, we picked up an error. We didn't pick it up until the agenda had gone out. So the detail behind that error is our subsidiary, RIC, declared a dividend, which the accounting standards allow us to recognise the revenue, but the cash is not forthcoming as at 30 June because the RIC board stated it will pay in the 18-19 year. We had mapped that to the wrong place in the cash flow statement, so the total cash balance is correct, but we just had the lines in the wrong place. So we've highlighted those in yellow for you, and that slight adjustment made a tiny change to the operating performance ratio, which is a cash measure. So we updated that, so there's two pages in the report, and apologies that we didn't pick that up before it went to the agenda.
Any other comments? If there are none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Hughes is absent. Item 13.1, councillors, decisions made under delegated authority. Councillor Bishop, you'd like to move that?
Yes, Madam Mayor. Just a report for noting.
Need to get a seconder for that. Councillor Elliott, go over to you, Councillor Bishop.
Just relating to decisions, thank you, made under delegated authority for categories 1, 2 and 3 development applications. Thank you. Just moving that motion. Nothing to speak.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Hughes is absent. Next item is a list of development and planning related court matters. Move Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Bishop?
No, just to move the motion. That's the list of development and planning related court matters as at 4th of July 2018.
There are no comments. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. And Councillor Hughes is absent. Item 13.3, the Koala SPRP Division 9 request. I believe Councillor Golay is moving an alternative motion.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. Item 13.3, the Koala SPRP Division 9 request for 14 to 20 Bonnie Street, Thornlands. I'd like to move an alternative motion, please.
So moved, seconded by Councillor Boglari. Would you like to speak to your motion, Councillor Golay?
Yes, thanks, Madam Mayor. The alternative motion is that Council resolves to refuse the applicant's request made under Division 9 of the South East Queensland Koala Conservation State Planning Regulatory Provisions to reclassify the high-value bushland habitat to medium-value rehabilitation as the land classified as high-value bushland habitat is appropriately designated on the map of Assessable Development Area Koala Habitat Values.
Was you speaking to it, Councillor? Speaker?
No, that's actually the motion.
Okay. Would you like to speak to it then? Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. So first of all, before I commence, I just want to make it very clear that I have no affiliation with any of the residents who have made contact with me in good faith as the Divisional Councillor. So I have no conflict there. I've had several pieces of information come to me from various planning officers. So first of all, it's been suggested that there's still koalas active in the area by officers, and there's actually two things to consider under the request to change the labelling of the land. So if we refer to Division 9 of the Assessment of Koala Habitat Type, as part of the development application to which Divisions 4 to 7 apply, an applicant may request the assessment manager to make a determination that land which is part of that development application is of a different koala habitat type than the koala habitat type shown for the land on the map of Assessable Development Area Koala Habitat Values. However, the residents of Venn Parade believe that the land management since 2010 has depleted the area of high-value bushland habitat, and therefore the applicant is naturally going to seek an assessment based on subsection 1 of the South East Queensland Koala Conservation State Planning Regulatory Provisions. An applicant who makes a request under subsection 1 must provide sufficient information with the development application, and if requested as part of the response to the information request, the assessment manager to make the determination, plus also sufficient information for subsection 2 includes, but is not limited to, a report by a suitably qualified and experienced professional in respect of the habitat located on and in connection with the land for which the determination is requested. The residents of Venn Parade believe that the applicant, in accordance to subsection 2 and 3, has provided a current report via Gondwana Ecology Group, which reflects the site presently in its current state. The purposes of assessment of development whereby sequential clearing has not been and will not be taken into historical account, which allows for subsection 1 to be considered. An assessment manager who receives a request under subsection 1 may determine as part of its decision on the development application that any part of the land the subject of the request is of a koala habitat type different to that shown on a map of Assessable Development Area Koala Habitat Values, or an area where koalas are generally not present. Redland City Council officers can only assess on the site as it's presented today without prejudice, and I understand that, and I think the residents understand that. However, as the site clearly shows variables to the mapping of the assessable area based over time along with aerial photographs, the sequential clearing over time has not been taken into consideration on behalf of the residents who have observed the changes due to what they believe is poor land management practices, depleting the high-value bushland habitat. The site in question falls just inside the Redlands urban footprint, and the South East Queensland Koala Conservation State Planning Regulatory Provisions display maps via the Department of Environment and Science. It's actually map number 20. Showing the site as high-value bushland habitat, irrespective of what impact has currently taken place by private land management practices. Can we just have those photos placed up, please? The applicant's own assessor has stated in its report, this is the Gondwana Ecology Group, it stated in its own report under Council's Draft Report Agenda 13.3 section titled Proposed Changes, that the areas proposed for development is devoid of koala habitat trees due to 10 years of clearing. This actually confirms the aerial photographs here. So by Gondwana's own report submitted to council, you can see the depletion of the foliage over a 10-year cycle. So that's what was there originally. This is what's here now. It is the applicant's expert advice that clearly shows that land management practices have brought about the removal of the mapped high-value bushland habitat, and these drafted findings need to be strongly considered before approving an application and reducing the site to medium-value rehabilitation habitat. The fact that the land has been managed in such a way as to reduce the foliage in general, officers obviously can only assess the site in its current state, which will of course present a different picture to what was meant to be there. And that still goes back to the Gondwana ecological report. But it still shows in their report, which is drafted in our report, that over 10 years of clearing and land management, that's what's depleted the high-value bushland habitat, but it's still classed as high-value bushland habitat on the state government mapping. Council officers have sent me advice to state that there is still koalas available on the site. Brett Dibden actually supplied me an email to state that there's still koalas on site there. Residents believe the site in question will now of course present incorrectly as shown by aerial maps due to the land management practices locally and any sequential clearing of high value bushland habitat over 10 years. Officers would have no choice but determine without prejudice that the relevant land is identified on the map of accessible development area koala habitat values as being incorrect based on Gondwana's report suggesting 10 years of clearing. However, Gondwana's ecological report, while suggesting the site is largely devoid of large koala habitat trees due to what residents believe is 10 years of sequential clearing, does suggest that regrowth trees suitable for koalas are available. Gondwana's ecological report suggests that open paddocks to the west are devoid of sufficient trees, but residents believe that this is irrelevant as the area is outside of the Redland City Council urban footprint, therefore not fit to be considered as at this stage for urban residential development. Residents strongly believe that while planning officers can assess on the merits of the current ground truthing, the land has been removed, the habitat has been removed by poor land management practices over 10 years, and it's these practices that have impacted the site and remove what was once high-value bushland habitat as mapped by the Department of Environment and Science Queensland. Furthermore, the Southeast Queensland... I'll skip forward because I know I'm taking time. Redland City Council Wildlife Connection Plan 2018 and 28 also suggests that this is an enhancement corridor and it's mapped accordingly. So that's the second highest priority over and above the high-value bushland habitat. Now, if we look at the picture for 2018, where you can clearly see a lot of clearing, irrespective of how the clearing became about, you still have in place koalas present, sporadic trees that they can use. It's still mapped as high-value habitat, and it almost forms and could be included as being a stepping stone corridor as well, which is also within that report for Redland City Council, the 2018-2028 report. So a stepping stone means that basically where there is a large proportion of high-value habitat on the northern side, wildlife, koalas, etc., can still transit through that corridor down to the southern end towards Epra Park Creek. I think I'll leave it there because I've actually covered quite a few points, but just very quickly, the Gondwana ecological report clearly states that there's been sequential clearing for 10 years. So that's the difference you see in the photographs. The state government and the SPRP mapping still has it as high-value bushland habitat. From my perspective, and the residents' perspective, the fact that there's been an intrusion of poor private land management practices, that's not for us to determine. It's mapped as high value and the land can be regenerated. And I think one of the points that was raised, and I reflected upon this with the CEO yesterday, was you've got two scenarios here, one where you had a compliance matter that may or may not have been followed up because of the land management practices, or the fact that right now in this minute the officers without prejudices have to look at the land for what it is, where it's actually partially cleared, and make a decision, do they downgrade the value of the land. The state is saying that it's still high value habitat land. I'm proposing that it's only poor land management practices that have impacted there. That's confirmed by the applicant's report, which says there was 10 years of clearing. We certainly didn't clear it. I'm sure the wildlife didn't clear it. It was the introduction of another species, cattle, for example, and the use of a herbicide to keep weeds down. I'm not suggesting anything untoward. I'm just saying that the land management practices have depleted the high-value bushland habitat that we saw 10 years ago. That's been confirmed in their own report to council. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Golly. I assume Councillor Kelty is speaking against. Question? Sure.
Mr. Chair, I'd like a planning officer to explain the mapping and the regulation that supports the recommendation that's been made by officers, please.
We have an officer in there.
Through the chair, morning, almost afternoon, councillors. So the request put forward by the applicant that councillors considering is whether the site, as currently mapped, so it currently identifies two types of classifications under the Kuala State Planning and Territory Commission: partly high-value bushland and partly medium-value rehabilitation. So the applicant has requested to have part of that high value, or to have that high value bushland area reclassified as medium value rehabilitation. There's definitions within the State Planning Regulatory Commission for bushland habitat for rehabilitation. So what our officers have been required to consider is what does the current land constraints of lands on site context, where does it match to? Better defined as bushland habitat, or is it better defined as rehabilitation habitat? So those definitions were considered. Bushland habitat is in general a closed canopy, contiguous native vegetation. Rehabilitation habitat is scattered trees, open canopy, not contiguous vegetation. So officers consider that the site as it is at present better reflects the rehabilitation habitat definition. So that's the decision.
Thanks, Chris. Any questions? Officer?
So the recommendation of officers, which is not reflected in the current motion, doesn't state that the site is devoid of habitat values. It just recognises the values that are present on the site, and the regulation requires the decision made by council to do that today. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's correct. So the recommendation from officers is that the part of the site currently designated or classified as bushland habitat is better defined or better meets the definition.
I think I'll take it. I was up to speakers. I was against. Speaker four. Councillor. Speaker against. Sorry, speaker against. That's right.
Thank you. I'm a bit concerned about the maybe we're trying to use a promotional argument to justify the change. What I mean by that is the process will have been embodied to be assessed. Council have gone back and said 10 years. I don't know what 10 years is. I don't know what that 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 is. changes. I would assume you could probably go back 15 years ago and perhaps it weren't houses on the other side. Maybe we should say. Not that, that argument, but perhaps those houses shouldn't be there, or should be putting over those around the house so they have the same sort of quality of vegetation. The longer you go back, it seems to me it's the argument is based on the premise that you go back a certain period of time, and it's a change you should be saying it's got to be at that point in time. Really good assessment of what it's the present. And even if I accept the premise of the argument, there is no guarantees that that land is going to change anything at all. It's going to get back to the right walls. Anything's going to change further than some places of land. So I understand that there is a concern that the land has changed in 10 years. But I can't because I don't believe that it's a sustainable
to. Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Speakers four, Councillor McGlurry.
Oh, thank you, Chair. I'm actually recognising the values of the land as today and not 10 years. The Wildlife Connection Plan, this section of land is in here. It is part of the Enhancement Wildlife Corridor from South Street to Epripar Creek, and this was identified in 2018. So that is recognising the values of the land as of this year. Enhancement corridors are the second highest priority for protection and rehabilitation, as Councillor Golley has said, and it's saying that there should be a width of 100 metres, and it goes on and on in our wildlife collections plan for the value of enhancement corridors. This has been ground truth. This is scientifically based. It is of such importance. It will be included in the First Amendment package to our city plan. So that is the values of the land as today, and it will be going into our city plan. Unfortunately, it wasn't in there already. The next agenda item today from Council is our Koala Conservation Action Plan, and it actually talks about koalas utilising 68% of the available habitat in the city. There's a lot of also further actions in that strategy where it actually talks about the importance of these linkages, not just for koalas, but all other wildlife. Another point which surprises me is that the Redlands Coast Naturally Wonderful brand was actually just adopted by everyone in this room, and the consultants actually said to us, this is not just a brand. You can't just have a name as a brand. It is something that's supposed to go through the culture of the organisation and be considered in all our decisions. So today I think we need to consider that Naturally Wonderful part of that brand, which is what overwhelmingly the residents of Redlands spoke up about and said that is what they actually value in their lifestyle and across their city, and listen to them. And then one sentence in the connection plan I'd like to read. Fragmentation of wildlife habitat in Redlands has resulted in smaller disconnected patches of wildlife habitat that has reduced wildlife movement and has led to a reduction in biodiversity. So the more we fragment these corridors, the less naturally wonderful we become. And I think this is a really good example that only this year this land was valued as an enhancement corridor. And it's on those grounds, those recent grounds, that I'll be supporting Councillor Golley's alternate motion.
Thank you, Councillor Glory. Any speakers against? Councillor Mitchell had his hand up first.
Yeah, just a question to officers. Looking at present day values, appreciate the assessments and the difficulty of this one, and certainly pictures tell 1,000 words, and so I can feel the emotional part of it. But bringing it back to our current strategies, just want to get some clarity around the identification of this piece of this area as a wildlife connection corridor. On present day assessments from council, and then also the real or potential impacts of, that the reclassification may have on those values.
through you, Mr. Chair, if I may, to Councillor Mitchell. The Wildlife Connections Plan is a council policy document. It hasn't yet been translated into a planning document. It's not relevant to the decision to be made today, which is quite limited in terms of, as Chris has pointed out, the assessment of the values on the property within the context of the state planning. It's a narrow assessment, narrow decision to be made today. In the future, the Wildlife Connection Plan may make its way into planning documents and then we run the assess the planning connection. But for now, it's not.
Just a clarification that if this is a this connection plan is a council document and we've voted on it in here to accept it, why is the content of it not of relevance to the importance of the land?
Because the decision on this matter is being made under the Planning Act. The Planning Act tells us what information we consider making this decision. Until a policy document becomes part of the planning scheme, part of the district, we've got no sense. This is a bounded assessment. It's simply, are you considering whether it's bushland habitat?
So can I just have more clarification? Once, because I had that amendment changed when we got this to make sure it did go in the planning scheme, because I was shocked we weren't. Once this goes into the planning scheme, which I've been told is October, if this came in after that, this would then have relevance?
No, not quite right. So again, this is a very limited assessment of the habitat values under state planning permission. So state control. Where the corridors mapping would become relevant is when you consider development. So this is a very narrow matter. State planning permission. How do we describe the vegetation? State habitat or median value vegetation. Once you come to assessing an application for a subdivision or material change of use, then the corridors mapping would become relevant to the extent that it's been included in the planning.
Thank you.
Thank you, David. I'll take Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Chair. Just touching, I was going to go through that as well. Certainly in the 6.5 years that I've been here, this council spent millions of dollars on researching the pilot court. Corridor mapping, purchasing the land, and so forth. This to me looks like a given corridor that I can't support. I'm going to have to support the alternative motion because I can't support the application. Corridors, we've spent a lot of time and energy on that. We've got to be able to support that and give them points so it can carry some weight.
Thank you, Councillor Gleeson. Councillor Golub, would you like to sum up?
If I may, just another couple of points on some statements that have been made. So I just want to make it very clear here. Division 9, assessment of koala habitat type. 9.1, determination of koala habitat type for certain land, subsection 1. As part of a development application, and I would assume that that's what's actually being made here, that's what's being reported. The applicant may request the assessment manager to make a determination that the land, which is part of the development application, is of a different koala habitat type. So it's actually the applicant asking council to change it from high value bushland habitat. This is not council's call to do this. Our council officers, without prejudice, and both myself and the residents of Venn Parade acknowledge that, without prejudice, will ground truth or look at what's there now based on the distinction of the report that was submitted by the applicant through its own expert, which was Gondwana Ecological Assessment, who clearly stated high-value bushland habitat to medium-value rehabilitation are either largely devoid of koala habitat trees having been cleared for more than 10 years. It's not emotional, it's fact,
It's in the documents that it has been private land practices that have reduced the high value bushland habitat, canopies, koala trees, whatever was in place that was originally classed as a corridor. It's still in our 2000 and whether it's relevant or not, 2018 documents that state it is an enhancement corridor, and if we chose to, in the land's current state, we could actually deem it to be a stepping stone corridor, which is another lower level as well, because it, the land, whether cleared or not, still forms part of a north-south high-value bushland habitat area. It is the land management practices that have reduced the canopy and the foliage that was in place, not council, not the state, because according to the current mapping, it is high-value land, high-value bushland habitat. And so I've proposed a motion based on looking at legal aspects, the Southeast Queensland Koala Conservation State Planning regulatory provisions, and I have used their very own subsections to create the argument in defence of the residents. And as far as the residents go, I have to declare again, I don't know who all these residents are. I received emails and telephone calls from residents who reside in that area who have observed the clearing, and that clearing coincides with what's in the ecological report, and everyone understands that ground truthing and the current assessment can only be done based on what's there now. But the state is saying it's high value. We've got it listed as high value. It is still an enhancement corridor. It could be used as a stepping stone corridor. And therefore, I'm calling for support to refuse the officer's recommendation and go with the final, the alternate motion. Thank you.
Thank you, councillors. With that, put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Borglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams, those against Councillor Edwards. Thank you, councillors. Item 13.4, I believe we have a motion to allow that to lie on the table. Moved, Councillor Bog. In regards to the motion.
I was just, I had some of my concerns clarified, and I was just wondering if officers were here to present to us, perhaps that might clarify issues other councillors had, and we could actually deal with it today.
Let it lay on the table, thank you, Madam Chair.
There are a lot of questions that were asked yesterday that I think would be good for councillors to be able to spend a bit of time asking in between, and that was the advice that it was agreed to yesterday, and so that other councillors don't... haven't had the same opportunity as Councillor Borglari. Correct. And I believe I do have a motion for that item to lie on the table. Yep. Moved, Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams. Those against, Councillor Borglari. Thank you. Next item is skipping 13.5, going to 13.6. Moved, Councillor Hughes. Seconded, Councillor Mitchell. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Mayor. Apologies. I'd like to move item 13.6, Healthcare and Social Assistance Industry Sector Plan 2018-2023. Thank you.
Have a mover and seconder that already. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Mayor. As is in the report that we've read, this is an important part of Council's support to the these sectors, the healthcare and the social assistance sector. A lot of work has gone into this report, well over 100 pages. I'd just like to acknowledge that the report from page... I did have it marked. From page 107 is the Karama report. This report is in depth. A lot of work has gone into this. This has been used as a reference to the main report that has been drafted by our council officers. And I actually have read the whole report, and I thought it was very relevant. Some of the statistics are a little outdated now with our census of 2017 coming in, or 16-17. However, the report is still relevant even if the statistics are a little out of date. Thank you.
Speaker against? Councillor Bishop.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. Look, I totally support the fact that the local economy is critical to everyone, and councillors are keen to do everything possible to support the local economy and economic development. If we look at it in extreme, it has two ways that you can really enable the local economy. One is to allow the sectors themselves to lead the delivery of their own action plans, and the other, possibly a extreme version of that, is for council to lead that for the sectors. When we come to the action plans on page 82 of 16 strategies for action with 16 recommendations, I note that council is the lead on 13 out of 16 of them, leaving the sector themselves to lead three of those action items. I think that this is council trying to lead on delivering a sectoral plan which we should really facilitate. And if the sector itself came to us and said, hey, council, we've got some ideas and thoughts and strategies and plans about what we would like to do, I'm sure every hand would go up in support. My concern is that the delivery of what will, I think this is action plan 4 out of a proposed 9 action plans. I'd like to see what have they actually resulted in on the ground. I didn't support going down the path of council leading and designing the action plans. And I'd like to take this opportunity again to say that when it comes to the health and social sectors, the health and social sectors should be the ones leading their plans and coming to us and saying, here's how we would like you to help facilitate it. I think this is, as we go down the path, I can't see officers who are skilled, resourced within this organisation in order to lead these things, certainly to facilitate. That is our role, that is our job, but I think we are taking something else on, and I think we're over-promising, and I think that will result in us under-delivering. I don't support this.
Just bring Council's attention to page 99 of the document. Members in the gallery, you might not be able to see it up there, but certainly you may have a hard copy. You'll note that the action plan is there that's been summarised as a result of the report that Councillor Hughes, I'm just making sure that we're talking to the right document. You'll notice under Council's role that the great majority of those actions are facilitation. Have a speaker for Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. It's a comprehensive report, and I thank the officers for all the work that they've done on it. I simply want to sort of say, well, you know, we've talked a lot here today about the role of state government.
About the role of state government in the concerns of the community. And again, obviously healthcare does not generally fall under local government, but in so much as this policy and action plan supports our facilitating and encouraging improved services for our residents, then I think we should support.
Speaker against, Councillor Elliott.
Thanks, Madam. Similar to Councillor Bishop, I think we're going wandering into territory that we know and I'm sort of healthcare, aged care. We talked about yesterday. We're doing a transport strategy. Seen that city plans in place. That's the major key I've seen in my time in council. You get your plan right. The best follows. This is what we've had. various councils around this table in the last couple of months have had GPs look this up saying, where can we do this? Where can we do this? We had a look at land for sale up there, something like that. We didn't go there. We did a deep profits long term. We did an ageing plan. There was an ageing plan. I just can't remember what it was. We looked at that yesterday, sort of thing like that. Don't have a problem with that. Ageing percent. That's right. But certainly we this is a bit more than advocating. Now, we talked about advocating. The mayor's actually said in the conversation that we could talk to people about how much we could talk to police and stuff like that. We've got MPs now coming back into the room that we can have actual conversations about these things. Certainly on page 197 in action 1.5, it says providing incentive programs. I don't know how we can tell people to say this. We struggle on occasion, while our books are good, we struggle on occasion to run our business. And I think if we do our business well, the other businesses will be better. Certainly, I get back to the planning scheme. We've zoned the document up there. The old Fisher and Paykel plants, all specialised medical. They should be getting ready to go out there to tick off on the 8th of October. We'll take a lot of something. But certainly, we can talk to these people. But I sort of, we've got here developing local provider networks. Well, yeah, that's been done a bit. It's all here. They're all over red pages of them. Developing an organised resident attraction strategy. I don't think we need to attract anybody. People come here. They love it. They don't need a strategy. They just roll up. Investigate the potential role for Redlands Investment Corporation to invest in the development of satellite health facilities and clinics on the fringes of Cleveland. I'm on the action of the strategies and actions for Redlands here. Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, but that's right. That's fine, but I'm just saying these things are floated, so I'm sort of worried about we're going off and there's money to be spent, I know, 30 and 15,000, this and that. I don't have a problem advocating, but I don't think it's our business. I think we're wandering into places we don't need to go, get our planning strategy right, our transport strategy right, our aging plan strategy right. We really don't need to do that. There's lots of things we need to do right in our organisation. Thank you.
Speaker 4, Councillor Mitchell.
Thank you, Mayor. And acknowledging the concerns of Councillors Elliott and Bishop, but I think this report and the plan gets it about right and acknowledges those things, and I agree that we being Council and playing with public money, shouldn't be trying to do some of the heavy lifting. But I don't think, if we sit on our hands, I don't think that Redland City has done very well by just waiting for other levels of government and business to come knocking. In the past, in all areas, we punch above our weight in a lot of things. But I don't think it hurts us to be out there advocating, advertising our competitive advantages, bring people together, as well as those things in forums, etc., as well as those things around zoning that we do. All incentives don't need to be financial. There's plenty of other ways we can do that. So I certainly acknowledge that we don't want to go too far in pretending we're a different level of government or indeed big business. Our role should be carefully framed, and I think this plan does that, but I certainly am all for us flying the flag, being out there advocating, selling our advantages, and that's going to bring not just jobs and the economic benefits, the high value jobs it could bring and the other jobs that come with it. They're all high value jobs. Every job is a high value job, but the support services that come with it, but also health services to our community. Those services that are close to home, and not just for our ageing community, but for all of us, the kids and the mums and dads and the families that are here. So, sure, it's about economic development and jobs, but it's also about services and the health of our community. Thanks.
Question, Councillor Golley.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Is this report going to impact future proposed applications for aged care at all?
will it form some sort of structure or go towards future proposals? The reason I ask is that locally in Thornlands just recently, we've actually had the extension of the RSL nursing home there. That's actually increased locally in Thornlands and Redlands as a whole of 60 new jobs for high care patients and another 12 support staff. So it's an excellent news story. It's not a good news story, it's an excellent news story. So what I don't want to do is go against this report for a start. On a whim, I want to make sure that we're not sort of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, as you said. Is this going to actually impact future applications? If we don't vote for this, will it disincentivise other applications to come forward, for example?
I've got Kim in the back of the room there. My understanding is that the planning scheme will deal with those sorts of planning applications. But what it does provide will be ancillary services for those people in our community, potentially with the jobs that it creates to support people in aged care and also ageing in home. Is there anything you wanted to add to that, Kim? I don't think you're actually talking to the item. We're actually asking Council to endorse a position of the Economic Advisory Committee that went to the trouble of actually taking on board the sector or the concerns of the sector, including aged care. And aged care previously, there was an issue with actually being able to develop aged care facilities because it didn't fit into the category nicely. So this document allows us to advocate for those regulatory changes should they be necessary, but I think we may have already started to cover that with the city plan, but I'm getting a nod. So this basically says where there are hurdles and we want to encourage those opportunities that for the aged care sector, this allows that to happen. All right, are there any other... yeah? Thank you.
Just one thing, can I say also, we talk about the jobs, but a lot of low-level jobs and jobs. So we are hostile as a council to living accommodation, and this is where these people live, and private house and things like that, go to work and things like that. We are actively hostile in that partnership. If you want to see jobs, and there's lots of people out there doing a lot less than we do, need somewhere to live. So I think we need these jobs, but we need people to live here. And if we're actively hostile to that happening, and now the city plan's coming by in another 3 months, but certainly I don't, and I think we're picking on the wrong people when those things happen.
I'm not sure that senior medical specialists are looking for rooming accommodation, Councillor Elliott, because this actually encompasses much more than just people who have to support aged care facilities. It actually supports the ancillary requirements of people ageing in our community and people who are unwell in our community. So it's a much broader, it's not broader, and I think that probably...
I'm just saying that the specialist is fine. He's earning $300,000 or $400,000 a year, but I'm talking about the bloke got $40,000 a year. It's a wardsman and he's doing all the shit jobs. Those people.
Sorry, Councillor, you might want to.
I withdraw that. I'm sorry. Are doing the shifty jobs and they're the ones, they're the big unwashed. You know, they're the people that go to work and come home and do that. We need to be careful of what. We need to be careful of what we do in our planning and stuff like that.
All right, we've had some comments. There are any other councillors wishing to speak? Because I just want to highlight to councillors once again, bring you back to page 99. This is not us doing the heavy lifting. We've engaged the Economic Development Advisory Board to look at the sectors of growth across the state and particularly in our region. I've heard every single one of you individually and collectively complain about people leaving the city every day to go to work. So what does that mean? That we're now being thrown under the bus for public transport, we're now being thrown under the bus to build roads, and we have multiple ways of trying to at least minimise the impact on that sort of infrastructure. This is just one little way of doing that. I'm going to also say to you, councillors, that in the last 2 weeks, I've received phone calls, and I wonder why they'd call local government and what the mayor of a local government area. The first one was from Ingham's, telling me, we're very, very sorry, Mayor, but 150 jobs will be leaving Redlands. Those people would be in the same category and wage category as the people you're referring to. 150. Gonski. The following week, I get a phone call from Fairfax, from the government relations manager for Fairfax. 50 jobs. Gonski. Once again, potentially in the same wage group in the printing section as what we might be talking about today. So don't come back to me and say we've got an issue with congestion when we're not creating the jobs that are causing that congestion between 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock and 9, if we're not actually trying to replace those jobs with the expertise we've had from people such as Dr. John O'Connell from MARTA. And the sector did come to us. They came to me in 2012, 2013, looking to ways, work with local government and state government, private enterprise, to create a health precinct that would serve our ageing community. But because we didn't have a framework and we weren't acknowledging the opportunities, that opportunity, despite people that were around the room, universities, so education, medical, we had the MARTA, we had all of the major hospitals of Southeast Queensland in the room, we had TAFE, that opportunity went to Logan. So I'm certainly not going to sit here and say that we have no role in this, because otherwise those CEOs would not be ringing me and telling me about the jobs that they are just about to cut from our city. And they are jobs that we need to fill regardless of what wage level it is. And frankly, the job of facilitation and advocacy is not an expensive one. And I'm going to refer you to the list, because I think 99% of the items in the list from page 99 to page 103. Facilitate. I'm going backwards, by the way, so I'll go the other way. Facilitate, advocate, facilitate. Lead, facilitate. So lead, we talked about that, Councillor Golay, regulatory provisions. We have to lead on that because that's our job when it comes to doing planning schemes, right? That's our job. We have to lead in that space. The next one, securing funding to make sure we have a master plan for our hospital. How many times have you received a phone call about the inadequate parking at Metro South? And guess whose problem it is? It's not ours, is it? But we have taken the phone calls. So advocate, facilitate. That's not us building it, that's advocating. Increase innovation opportunities in healthcare. We just talked about this yesterday. Technology now allows people to age in their own home. We're trying to facilitate that, not deliver it, not create it, not build it, facilitate it. Because you're right, there aren't officers in this organisation who can do all of that, and nor do we expect them to, because there's plenty of people out there who make that their living on a daily basis. Next one, partner. Well, geez, that wouldn't be hard. Try to do that all the time, even when it comes to delivering public transport. Deliver. Advocate, partner. Advocate, facilitate. Regulate. Well, that's about the city plan. That's what we have to do, and that's been already referred to, and that was Councillor Golay's question. And the list goes on. Deliver. You know, I don't need to repeat it. Everyone's got a copy. But going right through to 103, 99% of those actions, or 95, are facilitate and advocate. And we all do that on a daily basis when we ring our state member. It's not an expensive opportunity. Let me also remind you that if we get these sorts of people working and living in our city, and we have a lot of GPs and specialists that actually live in this city, whether it be oncology or whatever it might be, and they go to the city every day to deliver their services, would love to live and work close to home. And those facilities will then actually help those people who perhaps need the services of an oncologist. And we've got plenty of those people needing those services, and they have to go and actually find accommodation, particularly for our islanders. And I know one particular case that I met on the Macleay Island ferry just a couple of weeks ago. They have to find accommodation 4 or 5 days at a time in the city. So why would we not try to help those people and care for those people by just advocating to have those services available to us for our residents who are ageing rapidly? And that's what we discussed yesterday. And it's not just about aged care, it's also about health. I see this as probably one of the most important things we do in the face of losing 200 jobs in the short term in our city. And I'm not certainly going to sit here and not fight for the opportunity to talk and facilitate with others in that sector. And the sector wants to be here. They have said that to us, and that's what the consultants asked their opinion on. To say that they're not driving it is not correct. They have been through this document not once but twice. So with that, I'm happy to hand back for summing up if there are no further comments. I think Trace, Councillor Hughes did want to say something.
Thank you, Mayor. I was actually going to say deliver, facilitate, facilitate, deliver. But thank you for that. You delivered it beautifully yourself in my summing up. I'd also like just to quickly go back listening to Councillor Bishop's comments. With our risk management on page 78, we have motioned a dot point here for failure to implement the action plan due to inadequate resourcing. So I just like to note that we need to support our staff to ensure that they are adequately resourced. And when it talks about people further down in the report, it says it will impact the workload of resources. I support the Mayor and our staff with this. If there is an issue and we are falling behind or we're unable to deliver to facilitate on these action points, I don't want to see us get lost and bogged down. I'd really prefer that someone put their hand up and said, look, we need a little bit more help or support here, and bring that back to us, please. And with that, I'd like to move the officer's recommendation that Council resolves to endorse the healthcare and social assistance industry sector plan 2018 to 2023. Thank you.
Put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour, Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Williams. Those against, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Bishop. Thank you, councillors. Next item is our corporate sponsorship policy, and we have a mover and seconder for that, thanks. Move Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Bishop. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Mitchell? It's the corporate sponsorship policy.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Sorry, it's a bit distracting there. I'd like to move updated policy 3084, corporate sponsorship policy. Purpose of the report is to seek the endorsement of the updates to the policy in response to some audit reports. Two parts of it that I can see. It's terrific that Council are going to be working harder on looking at the expenses and the impacts on the organisation, so that if we're sponsoring events, that we know exactly what that is and what our obligations and the impact is. Secondly, and equally importantly, I think having one business unit of council responsible for assessing also the benefits council and the community in those KPIs. So I think there's two really important parts to this, capturing what it costs us, but also what are the benefits. So I think that's going to add a lot of clarity.
Any speakers against? Is there a speaker against, Councillor Gleeson?
Thanks, Mayor. Look, this is a result of the internal audit. Read out a paragraph here. Overall, internal audit has rated the review of events management, sponsorship in kind as satisfactory. Internal audit identified that the governance risk and control environment substantially improved. Now, with that, everyone knows I've been part of an event in the city, and I've got to say it's getting harder and harder every year. We haven't discussed our event strategy or processes, I don't think, this term. We spent a lot of time on it last year trying to make it easier for smaller, not-for-profit groups to make these events happen, and I don't see how this is going to help. It's great for all the big commercial operators that run events and want to come into our city and get sponsorship and then charge residents $60 per entry to go into their event. And they've got financial gain out of it, and they can afford staff to worry about all this sort of stuff. All I see in this is more requirement from volunteers to provide more information and take up more time.
I don't see how it benefits the smaller operators that are volunteers. There's no reason why it could be supported really.
Councillor Edwards, you had a comment, and I think Councillor Tolter, you want to speak for the motion? Councillor Edwards?
Yes, it's quite funny because there's a paragraph that Councillor Bleachers and the Parliament's going to just reinforce it. Just because it's been brought to us, there's not something conflicting against our current policy that isn't meeting the requirements it does. This is just an extra. I must admit, I'm a bit unsure on this because I know there was an extra. I can see the governance side, but I also see an extra complicated process that probably could be more difficult to navigate. I don't necessarily think it will capture everything. I know it's trying to define an exact whole cost, but I don't know really where the benefit is. I must admit, I'm probably feeling difficult the option to have some workshop on it, some information clarification. I just want to highlight the fact that it's nothing efficient in our current policies and stands.
Councillor Tolton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree actually with both the comments of Councillor Gleeson and Councillor Edwards, and I wouldn't mind a little bit more information. My understanding was that this kind of formally wraps up and reflects what we already do. My concerns are to discuss other things that we can do to enhance the ability of providing for events in the city, which don't necessarily appear in this document but are not precluded by this document either. If my understanding of that is incorrect, or we do need to leave this lie on the table and go back and talk a little bit further about whether it needs to be enhanced or be guided. I was basically of the view that there is no reason why this can't go forward, and then we can add or enhance either this or through another document other policy initiatives that will help those community events and more localised events. But can someone give me some guidance on that?
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you, councillors, for the comments. This report is really to address an audit outcome recommendation to close out an audit item in relation to in-kind offers that council provides as part of sponsorship. What we've had in the past is community organisations or larger organisations will come to us and request sponsorship dollars, and council will provide sometimes quite significant in-kind support that isn't recognised either by those groups or probably captured effectively by council. This report is really making sure that we're transparent in that process and that the community groups that receive not only dollars but in-kind sponsorship appreciate the value of that contribution. So I think it's important that this document proceed in terms of completing an audit outcome, addressing the issue of in-kind, and then if you're looking at changes in terms of event strategies or in terms of additions or changes you'd like into the future, then you can take the time to reflect on those matters at a later date, and we can very happy to workshop that with councillors in terms of is the direction meeting your current requirements. But from an officer perspective, we would like to close out the outstanding audit item that relates to this policy matter.
I've got questions too, but I'm just wanting to check if we moved option two to not update it, are we then going to be in breach of some order? Would it be better, officers' advice, to change the officers' recommendation as it is, results to adopt the updated corporate sponsorship policy, however, proceed to a new revised version? So that we get the audit part dealt with, but we're also going to deal with our issues within a certain time.
I would be strongly recommending that you deal with the audit recommendations and then reviewing the policy further.
Yes.
And so I think if you really read the policy, it's not going to change process
that much for anybody in our community. It's about actually demonstrating what we are giving them more, and also identifying the roles in council. It's actually more of an internal, and really, if I just say at this time, you know, where we face great deals of scrutiny on various issues, that I would be strongly recommending that we adopt this. And if you want further review, that is certainly possible, and you might be able to have a workshop to ask what difference it will actually make.
Can I ask, can we amend that motion to have the council resolve to adopt the updated corporate sponsorship policy with the intent that a review be occurring
with a further review of the policy?
Within a 2-month time frame, something like that.
That's an amendment, council, that's been. I probably wouldn't be putting a time on it.
A time frame might give councillors just some assurance.
I'm conscious that there's a great deal of pressure on it. Sorry, councillors. Officers hearing that we want to be have a further workshop on this and then review it. On the events. No, well, I'm hearing different stories here. Sorry. Kim?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, councillors. The policy itself is. Covers the outcomes, and so it does close out that information. It also allows for any changes to the council's event strategy or the guidelines that set behind the sponsorship grants to be reviewed. That happens as a natural consequence. So, from what I've heard in the discussion, it's not the policy that the council is interested in. It's how do we implement our event strategy, which in fact is separate to the sponsorship guidelines. This is a grants process. It's receiving applications, assessing the economic investment that those events can bring to the city. What sits behind the policy is the guideline, and that's the back of the house. How do we capture information, assess that information, and it's a very robust document. Workshops where gradually improving capability within the community for writing various quality applications. I'm very happy to facilitate a workshop to look at some of those issues about the events that are being delivered, the professional aspects, a lot of work has gone into how we can improve the capacity of organisations. Information out there to groups about these grants being available, and then how our strategy might work together with the grants to do need
to. I've just got a couple other people before you, Councillor Bishop, and then Councillor Gleeson.
Yeah, I was just referring. I certainly agree that compliance reported is critical. We should do that as well. And subsequently, I think Councillor Gleeson referred a moment ago that we haven't discussed events in this term. Actually, if you refer back to the previous item, just adopting the health sector and social sector strategy action plan, we in 2017 adopted an events strategy and action plan. We did it in 2017. It's sitting on a shelf right near you, able to access whenever you wish. And you supported it very recently, sitting there as a red hot item sitting on a shelf somewhere.
Thanks, Mayor. Look, we've got two options here in front of us. One is to adopt the updated corporate sponsorship policy that we hasn't been brought to us before today. In council, it hasn't been workshop.
It was discussed in audit, however, correct?
Oh, in audit. Okay, in audit, yes, not in
that would be minuted
forum.
And distributed.
Or we don't adopt it, and we request further information or change to the policy. There's not an urgent time frame. This doesn't have to be approved today. Why don't we bring it back and get it right, rather than approving a policy which we've had no input on? Why don't we get it right first and then approve it once it's right? Let's not approve something that we don't like on the assumption we're going to fix it. It's not the right way to go about it. Let's get it right first.
The intent of the policy has changed all that much, Louise.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. No, the intent of the policy hasn't changed. It's the same policy that Council has had. It really is addressing the issue of in-kind, which is additional to the existing policy. And just to pick up the point in relation to the matter of whether it's important that it gets decided today or not, you will be aware that our audit committee, which also the outcomes come to Council for consideration, you monitor and manage outstanding audit action items. So if we don't complete that audit item, we'll have a recurring outstanding item that Council will be looking at officers to address. This is our solution to that outstanding item.
Look, my issue is more so the lack of input from councillors.
This is all about the in-kind, and I can give you plenty of
it's
examples.
It's about in-kind support, and I understand all that, and the way it's written, it's just designed to create more work for the
volunteer groups.
What
councillor input
would
change that? Should we not be making sure ratepayers are
I can tell you, Mayor, this is my personal point of view.
Excuse me, councillor. I am chairing the meeting, and when the chair speaks, according to standing orders, you need to be quiet. I'm just saying that this is simply about acknowledging the in-kind and making sure the roles in the organisation are identified. It has not changed the intent, and frankly, doesn't need the input of a councillor because it's an audit recommendation. And I would challenge any of you here not to take the audit advice very seriously in the atmosphere and environment that we are currently living in local government. Now, you have an option to vote against it if you're not happy with it. If it doesn't get up, then you can put forward another option. Councillor Golay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just two questions. One, does this impact any decisions or implementation from RIC, where they've done any sort of sponsorship?
No.
Or given anything?
Nothing to do with it, Councillor.
Okay,
completely.
And then the second, does this impact any local businesses? To look at jobs, local suppliers who can either provide services to our events.
No, that will be up to the people who run their events. Kim, did you want to add anything to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to add that in acquitting a grant, we do require information which needs to demonstrate the extent to which they have engaged with local business or local suppliers. And this leads information to what's the council what are the community benefits, how is that supported?
So this is about sponsorship in kind, and they will have to put forward that application to capture the data, as Kim has just articulated.
I was also going to add that all this change is doing is bringing out to the surface what's happening in council anyway. So right now, those decisions about providing traffic, traffic management planning, the support of events, fencing, that's happening throughout council now. It's the financial impact, if you like, the visibility of that investment isn't being captured. And it's not being built until this change is made. It's not that requirement to bring forward.
Councillors, are there any concerning further discussion required? I'll hand back to Councillor Mitchell. Seems like a long time ago.
Thank you. That was great chat. Thanks, everyone. So I think, in summary, to close out the audit requirement on the in-kind elements, I think we should be supporting this today. But there certainly has been an appetite to review the event strategy and KPIs around the number of events and what we do. So I'm sure that has been captured by the officers, and there is an understanding that we look forward to a workshop in the future that it won't get lost in the cracks.
Thank you. Put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams. Those against? Councillor Gleeson. Councillors, moving on. Thank you. 14.1, we have disposal of truncated land. Moved by Councillor Bishop, seconded by Councillor Boglari. Would you like to speak to Councillor Bishop?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just acknowledging 14.1, which is the disposal of truncated land situated adjacent to 28 and 32 Hardy Road, Merkdale. The brief overview of this is that when this lot was originally proposed, it was suggested that it was to be a road reserve, and there were two corners to allow turning in and out of that road that were earmarked as a portion of land that is no longer going to be required because there's a house on it. So it's just really just bringing that into clarity that reflects what is on the ground. Thank you.
Speaker against? There being none, put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously, and Councillor Edwards is currently absent. Next item is 14.3, Redlands Baseball Incorporated lease renewal, moved by Councillor Elliott, seconded by Councillor Bishop. I'd like to speak to Councillor Elliott. Any other questions or comments, councillors? There being none, I'll put that motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. And Councillor Edwards is still absent. Item 14.4 is proposed lease with the State of Queensland, 12 Myerson Street, Redland Bay. Moved Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Hughes. Would you like to speak to Councillor Elliott? I believe that the Acting General Manager of Infrastructure and Operations gave you some advice on that, and the flexibility remains. Andrew?
Through you, Madam Chair, it does remain. There will be terms of the within the lease to allow for any early termination.
That's already been raised with the... I'm not sure that was a case of Councillor Edwards. I think it wasn't that matter. It was a different matter. It was Councillor Elliott and Councillor Bishop. Thank you. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Oh, did you have a question? Sorry. Question. My apologies. Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Mayor. I guess my question is to Andrew, through you. Any exiting of the lease agreement, is that is nowhere in the motion? Confirm that?
It's in the detail.
It is in, not in the motion, though. No. Doesn't need to be in the motion. No, it doesn't. Thank you.
All good. Put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Councillor Edwards is absent. There is no mayoral minute or any notices of motion to appeal or amend. No urgent business, but we do have closed session. So if Councillor Elliott is moving that we can go into closed session. Seconded.
Mayor, I have a conflict of interest.
No, declare your interest.
Thanks, Mayor. I have a conflict of interest in item 19.3 in sponsorship round. I'm a little bit unsure as to what to do here because it's confidential. I would like to stay in the room and apply the vote. If you just put me in.
So you stay in the room, Councillor?
I can't say what the conflict is, I don't think, without talking about the confidential item. So I'm unsure totally how I can do that.
Unfortunately, this is where the legislation hasn't considered all situations.
I'm happy to talk about it.
You'll need to do that, Councillor.
It's no, it's not financial. I get no financial gain out of the item or the decision to be made, but I am actively involved in one of the items in 19.3.
Councillors, with that, we will now need to take a vote whether Councillor Gleeson will remain in the room. He's declared his conflict while the vote is taken, correct?
Leave the room.
So, councillors, sorry. So you've been given the conflict, councillors. So just I need to understand if there's.
The conflict.
He's formed the concept. He helped form the concept, and he is on the management committee of the festival. But he doesn't receive
that's
any...
That's a bit different to helping. Yeah.
He doesn't receive any financial benefit or handle the finances of the festival. It's not an executive position, it's just a... I'll get advice from John Oberhart, but he doesn't manage finance, he's on the management committee, he's not on the executive of Rotary.
Excuse me, Mayor, are we in confidential or not?
No, we're not yet.
Thank you.
John, would you? He's asked to remain in the room in the public interest and vote in the public interest. And I'll take advice from John Oberhart as to the conflict.
Yeah, these new provisions probably didn't foresee everything that would occur. So I'm pretty comfortable that you need to declare it now while we're in open. It's to do with a sponsorship, which even though it's confidential to the gallery, the council has foreseen it. So I'm pretty comfortable. Everyone who needs to vote on this knows the content of the item and Councillor Gleeson's relationship with that, other than has been articulated that he's on the management committee, not in an executive position. He's saying he's declaring the conflict, so I think my notes here were, firstly, we've got to decide if it's real or perceived. So that's he's declared it as real. But even then, even if he has, it's almost like it says we've got to vote on real or perceived. And then after we do that, we vote on stay or go. So whether he's allowed to stay and participate in the public interest or whether he's not permitted to be present when the debate happens. So again, we're sort of learning as we go. But I guess my advice is, based on my quick notes here, the first thing is it perceived or real? And honestly, you've got to make up your own mind based on the best information you have, whether he has a perceived conflict or a real conflict. So none of us will be able to give you advice.
Question. I'm going to allow a couple of questions, and hopefully we remember this for next time because it will happen again. I think Councillor Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Given that we are road testing this for the first time, my view is that it's easiest to say that it's perceived. Whether or not it's real is debatable, and there's probably more information given the sensitivity. It's probably best just to know that it's perceived. I wouldn't support that it's perceived. And my view is that I think the councillor would have every faith that we would be voting in the best interest of the community on its behalf, and my preference would be to allow council to vote.
So councillor, I wasn't going to actually debate this. Okay.
No, I'm just putting forward my suggestion.
Yeah, I don't think that's actually fair because I've asked for questions to John. Putting your view forward now makes
said
it.
Road testing, so.
Well, I think in fairness, this is an opportunity to ask questions, not to state your position. Councillor Boglari?
I'm not on the committee, but I'm part of one of the clubs that actually worked. So do I have a conflict as well, and then yourself?
do we have the same, do we have a conflict, not to this level, but we also have to declare a conflict?
Just get back the phrase, members of...
Because then I'm wondering if you and I have a conflict, then we shouldn't be voting whether he has a conflict.
I've sought advice, and if you read, and we all went through a workshop, being a member of a community group does not constitute a conflict.
Right,
we're exempt.
Right. Okay. Yep, I just wanted to check before I voted.
Remember the, you know, what the decisions you make today, we will need to be consistent.
Just point of clarification, although committee membership did change that.
No. I'll get the CEO to read out the clause in the Act.
So I'm just going to read Section 175D of the Local Government Act, which sets out the definitions of a conflict of interest. Subsection 2 relevantly provides, however, a councillor does not have a conflict of interest in a matter merely because of an engagement with a community group, sporting club or similar organisation undertaken by the councillor in the councillor's capacity as a councillor, or membership of a political party, or membership of a community group, sporting club or similar association if the councillor is not an office holder for the group, club or organisation, or the councillor's religious beliefs, or the councillor having been a student of a particular school, or the councillor's involvement with the school as a parent of a student at the school, or if the councillor has no greater personal interest in the matter than that of other persons in the local government area. Also, a councillor who is nominated by the local government to be a member of a board of a corporation or other association does not have a personal interest in matters relating to the corporation or association merely because of nomination or appointment as a member.
I think that's clear, councillors. So I thought that those exemptions would be considered. Councillors, but I'll put the vote. If that's okay, those who believe that councillor Gleeson should remain in the room, vote. Just remember, councillors, this is the test that you'll have for yourselves. You'll be creating a consistent approach. So, those in favour, councillor Boglari, councillor Mitchell, councillor Golay, councillor Edwards, councillor Elliott, councillor Hughes, councillor Tolkien, councillor Williams. Those against, councillor Hewlett, councillor Mitchell. Just let councillor Gleeson know, and with that, councillors, I'll take that mover and seconder that we move into confidential moved. Councillor Elliott seconded private, so I think we can move into confidential on that. Did anyone let him know? Yeah, it's just a seconder that we move into confidential. Thanks. Councillor Boglari, those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Councillor Mitchell and Councillor Gleeson. Item, nature relationship, value of your donation, and when it happened.
Do you recall which campaign, the last election or the...
2012.
So again, I beg your indulgence, but I just reread that LJQ advice, and it seems to be that you're declaring the conflict. You can make a choice about real or perceived, but at the end of the day, the rest of the councillors are required to decide real or perceived because they may have a different opinion to you. So if we just were to run through that, and you really just... It's 50-50, so take a vote on whether it's real or perceived...
Yeah, he's going
to be... Oh, if he leaves the room, sorry, yeah. Apologies. Yes, it's all done.
No, well, my question is now, how do we deal with the rest of the item? No, well, where does Lance Councillor Hewlett sit then? That's only one part of the whole item.
Yeah, well, I think my advice would be he's... probably out for the whole item.
That's right.
And we'll get him to come back in when that's done. And then, of course, you'll have to leave when we
vote.
Come back out of confidential and take the vote. Yeah.
Councillor Hewlett, can I just make a suggestion? You check the details. Just check it for when you come back to make sure they're correct, the amount and the time. We use that time properly. Okay, mover and second that we go in back into confidential. Move Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Tolte. Those in favour, those against. Motion is carried unanimously and Councillor Hewlett has left the room. For us, 19.1. Which is a officer's recommendation with an amendment. Moved Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour, those against. The motion is carried unanimously. Item 19.2, we have an amended recommendation that refers... Oh, pardon me, sorry. Yes. Now... And you... Okay, move with the amendments up to the attachment. Is that sufficient? Have we got that up there? So move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour, those against. Motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Hewlett is absent. Item 9. Sorry.
Councillor. Can we get an... That's correct. Yeah, it's what it says. So it endorses the sponsorships panel, the panel's decision on the Quandamooka Festival and the Triathlon Series, and it then increases, we council increase the sponsorship to the Bayside Blues Festival to 15,000. Yep. Okay. Councillor Tolte, happy to move that?
Happy to move it. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Move Councillor Tolte, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay. Councillor Hughes, you can vote against it. It's okay. Where is the wording incorrect? It's confidential, Councillor. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Mitchell, Golay, Edwards, Hughes, Tolte, Gleeson, Williams. Those against? Councillor Hewlett, Elliott and Bishop. Thank you, councillors. We have one more item, which is 19.4. The items come from the table. Move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. And the meeting is closed at 3:10.